This meeting is being recorded.
So, is everyone accounted for here? Hopefully. Hi.
We're just missing Terry.
Okay. Which he sometimes. Oh, isn't Piper going to be here though? Is she here? Oh. You can hear me. I don't think I could hear you.
She's here.
Oh, good.
I'm here. Hi, Beverly.
Okay. Hi. For some reason, I don't see you, but that I know you're there. And I think Terry generally joins a bit later. So shall we just call the meeting to order since there's a lot going on?
Yes.
Okay. So you all probably got a copy from Brandon and Regan about the revised agenda, because it's such a full agenda for a lot of discussion topics. We thought it might be a better use of our guests' time to speak to us before they have to listen to all of our discussions. So I believe, Brandon, is John Hugh and Peter Finkel here to talk about the Elks Building mural?
I do. I see Peter Finkel in the attendee area, and so I'll call him over when we get to that item.
And while we're waiting to get them set up, I just want to mention that Brandon and I discussed trying to put a time limit on some of these project discussions, because sometimes they go for a long time. And I think, Brandon, you might help, because you had already put together an estimate of time for like the first planning action review at 30 minutes and the next one 15. Would you be willing to just time us, keep a timer? Is that inconvenient? I didn't ask you to do that till now. But
yeah, I can do so just to let you know where we are.
Yeah, just so we know where we are. And so the only change is to move the topic of the proposal for a mural on the Elks building so that they can have about 10 minutes. I think you suggested 5-minute presentation and then 5 minutes for Q&A, right?
Yes.
Okay.
For the commission, obviously.
So we'll just wait for them to join.
Charlie, do you want to approve the minutes first?
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm supposed to do, I do believe. Yes, it is on my agenda. I printed the agenda about 5 times. Okay, so, yes. Did anybody have any questions about the minutes? There were a lot of recommendations for all the projects, so I hope everybody had a chance, because you guys had a long meeting last time, I saw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that. You're lucky you weren't here.
But see, you came back for another day. Good. Yeah, for you.
I just made it, too.
Begrudgingly.
I'm sure. Is there any comments or changes that need to be made to the minutes for March 2?
I think. Can you hear me?
Yes. Sorry.
I think they look great.
I do too.
And I would make a motion to approve.
Is there a second?
I would second.
Oh, good. Thank you. And if there's not any further discussion, all those who are in favor of this motion to approve the minutes, please say by saying aye.
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 Okay. I thought they were very well done, Regan. And so now we can move on to the public forum if the people are available.
I could start by introducing John Pugh, a local muralist who's done work all over. And he's now joined as a panelist and can present a concept that he's been working on regarding the Elks building and a mural. So I'll turn it over to you, John. Good to see you.
Okay. Boy, that was quick.
We try.
I'm just really excited to even have the potential for doing a mural in town. I just moved here about a year and a half ago, Oh. And well, let me show you some stuff. So maybe I can share the screen with me. I just do a really quick little thing and show you some of the ideas I've had, and then leave room for feedback and discussion for sure. So can I share? There we go. Share screen. Okay, let me go to this, and let me see if I can turn that into a slideshow here. Okay, so everybody can hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
And can you see my cursor too? Here, let me,
mm-hmm.
let me go back here a little bit. Okay, so this, I just got a couple murals here. This is what I do. I do architectural illusion, and I like to work in heritage or work sophisticated concepts into the illusion, just because there's no reason you can't. And I've been doing this for quite a while. I've received a lot of international attention. Here's an example of what I did in Illinois, and there's the wall to the left before, and then I smoothed over the bricks and repainted them, but then created this illusion on the right that was celebrating the flappers from the Roaring Twenties, and just some of the stuff going on. Like, you got Georgia O'Keeffe in there too, which is kind of fits into the whole liberation age. Well, I don't need to get into the concept too much, but there's a lot of thought that goes into these, and here's some of the figures up close. So I do like to do figures. You can interrupt me at any time too, if you'd like. This is a mural I just completed in Hermosa Beach this last summer. And it's, again, going back to the 20s. That seemed to be a running theme for some reason this last year. And I guess they just got out of their pandemic back in the 20s. And they're all playing on the beach with all their, it's meant to go back in time and celebrate this building, which was the Hermosa Biltmore that used to be there. So that was kind of the history lesson that I was asked to kind of expound upon. Okay, and there we go. So then this is also another thing I did for a theater in Minneapolis. It's the oldest theater in Minneapolis, and it's called Theater in the Round, and I kind of ran with that idea. So you can also see up here, I don't know if I'm going to be doing this, but up here on this top right, there's what looks like this thing is coming out and above, or right here. A lot of times I'll break the picture plane, not actually come out from the surface, but break the picture plane a little bit to create even a further illusion. Because my experience is everyone likes to be tricked. This is a lot different from the anamorphic stuff you see on your phones, where you have to walk around to get it and just get a picture. People, when they see these things, they actually think something's happening with the wall. And I think that human experience of being fooled has a universal appeal. And I think once they have that human experience, like, oh, that got me, people are invited into the concept more and learn about whatever it is, the area, the theater, in this case, the town of Ashland. There's probably the closest project that I've done to Ashland. That was at Chico State University. And that's actually the entrance to the university from downtown. And this is really what catapulted my career. I did this quite a while ago, and it was a great experience. I was getting a lot of attention before the internet, but anyway, I don't want to date myself too much. And I think this piece right here is the last piece I'll show of my past work, is a good example of the kind of feeling that this mural idea that I'm going to propose to you. Although the one I'm proposing is more about the topic and the subject, not about the shadows and the illusion. It's more about the idea. But this, as you can see on the bottom there, it's in process. And it's besides the very far right, which has a little bit of a fire tower type thing, exit tower. It's all two dimensionals and trying to create the illusion. And I want you to also notice the grids on that wave that really assist with the illusion of this thing going back in and curving around. And that would be a big part of what we're doing with this thing too. Okay, so here's the initial concept. And it doesn't have any shadows or any of the reflective light or all any of the model studies I would be doing to create a very vivid illusion. This is more purely about the subject and the idea. And the main thing is I thought that the Chautauqua domes, like the inner one, the blue right there is the original, and I'll show a couple quick close-ups of that, is the original Chautauqua Dome painted blue. And I'll explain that in a second. Getting into this, like they're like eggs hatching, you know, before Bomer saw this foundation and said, hey, that reminds me of the Globe Theater, that there's these predecessor, I think, very compelling shapes that lend itself to this idea of discovery without necessarily spelling out Shakespeare, but the flavor of that. And you know, I got a close-up of that too. I can move in a little bit closer here. The idea too. Okay, so I've been talking to so many people about the history. I mean, of course, this area, Lithia Park, I guess, which was Chautauqua Park, when these Chautauqua domes were being built, was a center of the Shasta Indians and the Talcalma. I gotta make sure I got to saying that right. I'm probably not pronouncing that exactly right. Native Americans, and I do want to put a couple of them back into this too, so we have some preceding things about Ashland in there. So there's a nod to the Native American presence here, but at the same time, this idea that Ashland is this kind of a spiritual, has spiritual vibes. Gene Houston called this the new Asclepia, and a lot of people throughout. I mean, the first time I came to Ashland, I was 8 years old with my parents, and we saw a Shakespeare play, and I didn't understand what was going on in the play, but I remember I was so enchanted by the energy of this area and the Elizabethan theater, and there's this Renaissance flavor here and this spiritual vibe. So spiritual vibe is one thing, but also this idea of enchantment. Like I was thinking about, and I'll come back to this, but I was thinking about there's the Chautauqua Dome. I'll get back to the enchantment thing here in a second. I would make this a little more convincing, and of course with the shadows and the models, I would make all these layers of these eggs hatching, quote unquote, much more recognizable. And there's the second version of that. There's the eggs. So I just thought I'd throw that in there too. Coming back to this idea of enchantment. That's the other thing that I think of when I think of Ashland. And so these are just the artist expressing himself of what my flavor of what this kind of intangible energy about Ashland. Not that this painting exactly would be the right thing, but the name of this painting is Enchantment. And that feels so Ashland, the storybook element of Ashland and the Lithia Park and this kind of dreamy charm that Ashland has. This kind of feels like Lithia Park to me. Yeah. just the flavor of it. I'm talking a mile a minute because I'm just trying to cram all this in, but I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to talk about this stuff. So, and then there's this other Maxfield Parrish painting that had this one figure that's at the base of this kind of tree of life thing that's also in the mural inside of Lithia Park. Just love that flavor. And here's, it's not, I don't know what tribe this is specifically, but I mentioned that, and I want to make sure I remember to mention that again, that there should be a nod, I feel like, and I've done that with most of my work, of incorporating the preceding inhabitants here that lived and thrived here before we kind of abruptly came along. And I'm always trying to get that in. And then, so there's a theater light. So I think that leads me back to this final thing where we're going back to this again, the idea that there's this Maxfield Parrish thing kind of going on here. I worked in some of the colors on this Chautauqua Dome number one that made me, I somehow needed to get some realistic items in there that had some of these flavors of those paintings, because I thought some of those paintings depicted things, you know, really well in terms of this enchantment, and that moon could be like a paper moon hanging there. And this, you got the theater lights out here, so that it makes a kind of a reference that this whole thing is a production or a play or something about the story of Ashland, or at least this part of Ashland, kind of playing with this whole idea of what, you know, what's real and what isn't. And I kind of like that. That seems kind of Ashland to make this whole thing kind of like a theater production on top of everything. And again, I remember, if you remember the, and I'm almost done, that wave.
You're doing great.
Okay, good. And this is the last image too. So I hope I've done well with my time here. Because I haven't been keeping track. The idea of a shadow going in here, and then this dome itself would have some color shifts on the white that would happen in reality. There's a lot of things I have to discover with the use of a model, like that wave that was in the Hawaii project with Queen Liliuokalani. I actually hired a glass artist to make the wave that I could put into a box and have an opening above it, so I could study how that worked. Well, that certainly would be the case with this too. So what ends up happening is you do get an iconic kind of architectural statement that I believe is appealing, but also somewhat placemaking, because it's going to draw attention to it. But I think the right kind of attention. And I know I'm probably leaving out all sorts of stuff, but the side pieces and the lines on this mural back here with McLaughlin would assist with the illusion. The skylight on the top is not unlike the type of skylight they actually have inside the Elks Lodge. And yet this circular one, on a subconscious level, it kind of feels like Crater Lake. So there's a couple things that I think play into the location here without hitting us over the head with a hammer. So, okay, I think I've just spilled out all I was going to, I've designed to spill.
Well, I thought that was an impressive ability for a large concept, especially when you're tying history to these ideas of spirituality and enchantment. And by the way, it's much more fun to look at art than the usual stuff we look at. So this was a nice, refreshing change. And I want to make sure now, I wondered what the time frame for your proposal is.
You know, So I've approached members of the art commission, but I know that this is more important to get things clear with you guys first. And I'll go back to I'll be on the agenda. I talked to Stanley Smith earlier. I'll be on their agenda for this next meeting, good. Just to make sure that everyone's okay with this, hopefully. And I'm open to do that. And then I'll go from there. The Elks Club has expressed the possibility of raising some funds for this. I think the Arts Commission has a little bit, but I haven't quite got to that place yet. I'm more just spending a lot of, to be honest, I spent a lot of time on research in this area and talking to a lot of people. And this is important to me because this is where I live now. And it's not in Washington, D.C., like my other project I'm doing right now. It's here, and I want to stay here, and I want to love this place. So I'm feeling really connected to Ashland, and this has become very, very important to me. So I know I'm kind of not answering.
Well, the Chamber of Commerce would love what you're saying. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, I think so. So I think what you're saying is it's still an in progress discussion wise with the Elks. They've approved.
No, they actually are the ones that gave me some money toward the sketch.
Oh, okay.
So they're on board.
They're all in. Okay. I wasn't sure.
And then whatever it is, there's some easement with the wall. They've approved that. So all the things that I believe the building owner is required to do, they've already agreed to in terms of the thick prospectus of requirements for public art. But
what kind of things would you like feedback on from people?
Well, you guys are the history people, and I've been talking to a lot of people, but including Peter. I think he's in the audience. Peter's been a great help, Peter Finkel. Yeah. From a historical point of view, is there something that you would like to see in there that maybe I'm washing over a little bit? I know I can't get everything in there, but
right.
Or feedback, or if you feel like this is, because I think a lot of artists probably are not trying to get very historical heritage. And by the way, this wall is not brick. It's a smooth wall, a skin color. So I don't think I'm messing with any of the architectural integrity. I guess I'm just, maybe I should put back in your court. Is there any feedback from you?
Sure.
That
I think it's important that you hear from
our group. Is anybody want to make a comment?
I would love to make a comment. I was in the city of Eureka, California, last week, and that city has over 100 murals, and some of them are intriguing. But what I love about this is that it creates the illusion of three dimensions. And one of the things that's lacking here, for example, the mural at Guanajuato Way looks a little flat and uninteresting. Here, we're creating an interest with 3D and a lot more detail. And I do like that. Although I do have one, I would mourn the loss. My children, my adult children and grandchildren would mourn the loss of the reindeer and sleigh on the side of the
And as far as I'm concerned, it could stay, you know, if it's, or they could, I think they could probably put it back up. I'm not opposed to that, but maybe it could be moved around to the other, you know, on the front. I don't know, but I thought about that when I
it's
first.
Quite a feature. And, you know, it doesn't matter 11 months out of the year, but it becomes very important in December.
Well, you know, if there are stags in there, and maybe those could be reindeer. I'm just kidding. I mean, that is part of the concept, the deer. But I appreciate what you're saying, and I'm open to any and all solutions that, you know.
Yeah.
The reason the reindeer are so prevalent on that wall is because this is the best wall in Ashland.
Is it? Oh.
For a mural. It's perpendicular to Main Street. It could be lit from the top of Chase Bank. And you know, when I first came to town, I go, that's where I love
it. It would seem very good visibility there.
I think so. I think this could be a great placemaking attraction.
Yeah.
To be in with your public art collection. And but
the good part hearing from people like Bill is he's lived here for a while. I haven't lived here as long as some of you others have. What is your reaction to this sense of place that John is offering?
I could chime in. Yeah, go ahead, Sam. Go ahead.
Okay, I like it, and I really, it is the historic. It's one of the most historic buildings in Ashland. It is the historic Elks Lodge, and I really like the whimsical way that the Elks are there inside the Chautauqua. I find it very, I have an MFA. I taught art for 28 years, and I just find it very appealing.
And what were you going to say, Keith?
Sorry.
I wanted to, you know, thank Sam for, it's Sam, right?
John.
Oh, had the wrong name.
You can thank me too. Okay.
but I just wanted to just say that to have such a professional mural, whereas I think that, speaking for myself, I was a little disappointed in the execution of the Guanajuato mural. Mm-hmm. I think the original illustration that they brought for approval was more detailed and a little more professional. And I think that just because of the hurried pace and the time of the year, possibly, you know, it didn't quite meet my hopes and expectations. And I think that from seeing your work, I think it would, and it harkened me back. I'm from Los Angeles, and it reminds me of the LA Fine Arts Squad.
Oh yeah.
Particularly their painting at Butler in West LA called the Isle of California.
The Isle of California, that first one, are you talking about that one? With the bridge?
Yeah, with the freeway bridge broken off at the coast. I mean, the work that you showed us was just spectacular, I think. And I think that this would be a nice addition. You know, as far as public art, it's really professional public art. And some of the stuff you know, we've had challenges with in town. So this would be a real step forward, I think. And having Indigenous representation, I think, is important.
That's, yeah. Yeah.
And joking to a degree, the deer could be a little rattier looking to represent what we actually have here in town.
Yeah,
a little skinnier. Yeah.
Except for maybe one elk. Yeah. I probably have to throw in an elk for the Elks Club, but
yeah, there you go. Yeah, you got to pay homage.
and Keith, I don't mean to interrupt anybody else, but thank you for what you're saying. I just want you to know that Terry Schoonhoven and Victor, I forgot his name, but the LA Art Squad, they were my first, you know, major influence when I was in high school and I was looking at their work. And I know that mural didn't last long, but I thought that was extremely compelling. If there's any one influence more than another, it's that kind of surrealism that those guys used. And so I'm really connecting with, you know, you going back to that. A lot of people don't know about the LA Art Squad. So,
well, I agree that this kind of mural will stand out. All these other examples of your work, they're almost experiential because of that illusion. But I like the history of the Chautauqua myself too, and that to be the umbrella of this concept. I think we're very fortunate you moved here and want to do this. So anybody else, because we're wanting to move along if we can, but I find it very, very provocative and fun, and like Sam said, whimsical is a good word for it.
I have one final comment, and that's this is viewed at a distance, and it allows that 3D illusion to feel more real. If you could be viewing it more close up, it wouldn't feel as real or as encompassing. And it seems like this is the perfect wall for a 3D illusion.
It's, to my part, respond, it's so perfect because, first of all, our lens, our eyes are like camera lens. And the farther we get back, the farther depth of field that our minds will believe in. Like it'll pass the centuries of our brain that tells us what's real. So being backed off and actually being fairly perpendicular in this, what I call an illusion corridor, it's the perfect setup. So I appreciate what you just said, Bill, because there are walls that if you walk along the side of them, you would never get the illusion, or if you're too close, you wouldn't get the illusion. Yeah. And this is a great setup for a striking illusion. So
I think the other thing about it is you, as you come into town from the north and you come down and then you begin to come up and you see that wall.
Yeah.
It's going to be extremely striking.
Yes, I agree.
I'm counting on it.
So I have some comments. I feel like Debbie Downer here after all the illuminating comments. And John, I think it is an incredible location. And that's really the basis of my concern, is that it is such a big wall and in such a prominent location downtown that I'm afraid it would dominate. I mean, your quality of work is amazing, but I would just be afraid that that would dominate the whole street scene. You wouldn't want to look at the Lithia Hotel and the building that it's on. And so that's my concern. It's just, I just think it would change the face of historic Ashland.
So I disagree. I think that as you come into Ashland and you view the plaza and you come up driving south, it's a feast for the eyes, and it just adds another piece to that feast.
I agree with Bill. I think that, you know, the whimsical nature of this is so amazing, John. I think that you've done an amazing job. And it's, I think that for someone that just comes into the city and they as you said, they drive south, they look up there and I think they're going to start asking questions like, what a part of the city is in that mural? And it's going to engage them into the community and go, okay, there's Shakespeare, there's this Elks Lodge. you know, there's all this history that's put into one picture, into one mural. I do have a question about the mural on the left-hand side. Is that you said that was Mount McLaughlin?
Yeah.
Would be.
And that, am I still on? It doesn't have to be. So, I mean, I wanted to put something there that was kind of a side panel with the grid tiles that would add to the illusion. If that isn't, you know, Ashland enough, I can understand it. That's kind of up over the ridge a little bit. And there's no reason it can't be Pilot Rock or Mount Ashland or even another Maxville Parish type scene. So, you know, that part isn't as important to me as what's going on inside the dome. That was kind of almost like an afterthought.
Yeah, and I agree. I just don't want it to distract from what's going inside the dome there, because I think that what's going inside the dome tells a story, and it's amazing.
Yes, it is amazing, I think.
I would, if I could, I would agree with what Piper just said, and I want to figure out, as someone on the city council, how we somehow bottle John's enthusiasm and fun-loving spirit and sell it to our tourists so we can balance our budget. That would be amazing if we could figure that out. Exactly. But no, I would agree that, you know, we need to upgrade our vibe. I don't think an amazing mural like this is something that we shouldn't do, because, you know, it could somehow take the luster off everything else. I think, you know, Ashland needs to kind of reinvent itself, especially after COVID. We need a way to figure out how we attract people that are like, hell, that's crazy interesting. Let's go check Ashland out and let's have lunch. Let's go on a trail walk. Hey, let's ride a mountain bike. Let's drink some wine and let's stay over the weekend. That's what we need more than anything. So things like this, way to think out of the box to get people to, you know, attract people, families to come here. People like me who visited, fell in love with it and said, hell yeah, I want to raise my family here. That's what we need. That's Ashland's future. So bring it and keep bringing it, John. Thank you so much for that. I mean, I didn't know what to expect. You know, and I log on to as a liaison to these various meetings. Sometimes they're pretty mundane, but you're anything but mundane, man. So
yeah, it's
just listening to you go off. I was just fired up, man. I was like, we got to get together for a coffee. So
I love to
keep up the great work, dude.
Yeah, thank you, John.
I do. Okay.
So, who wants to speak now, John?
I'd like to just also say that, as was just pointed out, what our town could certainly use is a inspiring new breath of fresh air. And when you couple that with the Japanese garden that's being installed, which will be a garden that people will travel the country to come and see. You know, these are things that are happening now in our city that can only help, you know, resurrect us from the dead, you know.
Well, so,
Well, we have our problems, but what I realized is I'm feeling it's safe to travel now. We were out and exploring. We had a week on the California coast, and I think other people are feeling the same way. That it could be that this summer will, spring and summer will bring us increased visitors, increased interest.
Well, I would say you've generated a lot of enthusiasm, John. Do you feel that way? I think it's very exciting.
Thank you. And I just want to say too that, I mean, I agree with most people. I hate to say it, but don't we want to raise the bar? Don't we want to?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think there's. Well, I really appreciate your presentation, and it was very illuminating. Despite your concerns, you weren't presenting it right, but it's very stunning work. And so thank you very much. So your next step is to the Arts Council, and then at the point you make application, I don't know, would we be involved in that anymore at that point?
I think if you basically approve, that's a step that we need to.
Yeah, right.
I've been talking to a couple of them already. I think that they will approve it too. So I think that really the next hurdle, other than kind of going through the formality of it, is working with Elks to raise money and stuff. Yeah.
Well, it was a great way to start off a meeting. It was very fun.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Peter, as well, for bringing this to our attention. That's great. Okay. Oh, are we back now? Brandon's doing the magic moving. So now we could start. Sean, do you want to talk to us about the council?
Sure. I just think we should bring on the agenda how much we're going to price a bottle of John fun-spirited enthusiasm.
I think that would be
an interesting thing. I wish there was a lot to talk about. Since I spoke to you last, the biggest things that are happening is we have a new city manager who's digging in. Mr. Lessard is digging in, getting his feet kind of wet, understanding the organization, the strengths, places we need to improve, and also where we need to get more resources. So that's what he's doing. He's making necessary hires, especially within his administration department, his team. So last night we had a city council meeting and he introduced the deputy city manager, which is an added help for the administrative side of the city. Her name is Sabrina Coter. She comes from a smaller community in Colorado. Be working to kind of work with Mr. Lusard as the city manager to keep an eye on human resources, I believe the police and fire department, and some other things as she tries to kind of understand and get her feet wet as well with the depths of you know what Ashland is about and the delivery of the essential services. So over the last couple meetings, the agenda has been relatively light. You know, when I joined the council, you know, and based on budget committee meetings, I was quite used to 3.5, 4-hour meetings. Yeah. And come out of there and, you have an absolute migraine headache and you can't sleep till 3 a.m. because you're just so wound up. What I think Joe is doing, and I think quite correctly, is, I don't know, take this the wrong way, but trying to dumb it down a little bit in the sense that, you know, trying to get solved for the essential points now. But the biggest issue, and it's something that I've mentioned to you and something that I've mentioned, you know, my time on the council and the budget committee, the biggest issues facing our town are the fiscal issues and controlling and finding out how we fix this structural systemic deficit in the budget. So to do that, Joe has, you know, we're addressing these things. Last night, for example, we talked about the new work that the chamber is doing to address tourism, how we attract tourists, where they come from, all the dynamics and demographic data around that, so we can target, you know, for more tourists. So that aside, last night, that was pretty much the gist of it. What's going to happen? Joe just recently announced that the major departments within the general fund are going to be asked to come out quite correctly, I feel, with cuts, addressing reductions, 5% for the police and fire department and the residual departments within the general fund, community development, parks, administration would come up with 10%. So that's something which is significant in the sense that over the last 10 years, that really hasn't been addressed. So super important. It is not the only answer, but it certainly is a part of the jigsaw puzzle we're trying to put together as a cohesive group working together within the council. Now, that said, there is also, and you probably heard about this, the survey questions, which SOU is compiling, which will address more longer term, next several budget, the big structural issues that we need to address as a community, which will address essential services and how we pay for them and how we deliver them. So big stuff, important stuff. And as we solve for that, there's a lot of budgetary issues that will come up. that will involve, you know, all facets of the government, all departments, and the services that are provided to you, to us, the citizens of our town. So that in a nutshell is kind of what we've been doing over the last couple of meetings. I expect, over the next month or so, it to heat up quite a bit with additional meetings, you know, just covering other stuff, but not so much within the Historical Commission's realm, but just I wanted to give you an overview of you know, what we've been doing. So,
well, that's what we count on. Thank you very much for that.
No one's fallen asleep, so I guess mission accomplished there. Thank you very much.
Nobody's fallen asleep.
Could I ask
a question? Yes, I have a question.
I was just wondering, how are the water issues looking for this year?
Yeah, you know, the irony is last year, and I'm just going to look a little bit back here. Last year, you know, people were incredibly worried because when you come down from Mount Ashland and you look over to the amazing scenery we have there and you see Immigrant Lake and it's a mud puddle, everyone's like, oh my God, Armageddon. But in fact, the Rita Reservoir, which is our primary source of water for the town, I think was 80% of 15-year average snowpack. So that it was really kind of caught people, I think, off guard in the sense that they were really worried. You know, we all know that Hyatt, you know, the water that flows into Immigrant Lake that feeds the TID will probably be as bad, if not worse, than last year. The question is Rita Reservoir. So the last I heard, it was, you know, there was no major alarm bells going off. So that's something that's definitely a positive. And I think the city has also understood and moved away from previous policy that we would not use the Talent Ashland Phoenix waterline. It was, you know, essentially a massive capital improvement project expenditure that I think Ashland has, you know, paid up to $10, $12, $14 million to complete, and then it wasn't used. So it is more expensive than TID when you just look at the numbers per se, but if you added in all the operational expenses that the water department needed to add into, you know, treating the TID water, in fact, it was more expensive than TAP. So we are allowed up to roughly 2.3 million gallons a day through the Talent Ashland Phoenix waterline, plus Rita Reservoir. You know, I think it's not going to be a joyous celebratory year for water, but I think we'll be okay. You know, and hopefully over the next month or so, we continue to see pretty active precipitation through through the snowpack, and a smattering of rainfall here and there. So
thank you very much. We appreciate it. And now, how are we doing? I think we're doing okay for time. Is Brandon, what do you think?
I think we're about 20 minutes over our expectation.
I figured it is, but it was interesting discussions about that. So why don't we go on then to the planning action. And technically, should I be reading that description for the, I don't have to, do I? Or not?
No, I believe the description was read in at the prior meeting.
Yes.
Essentially, I'll just refer to that it's the item up for your review is planning action PAT2-2022-00037. Relating to the property at 165 Water Street, which is actually has three street frontages, also 160 Hellman Street and 95 Van Ness Street. The applicant is Rogue Planning and Development Services as an agent for Magnolia Investments. And it's a proposal for an 8-lot, which might have changed in the recent iteration, but a commercial subdivision to construct a mixed-use development at that intersection of those three streets. And Derek Severson, the senior planner, is here to give a brief staff presentation. And we also have the applicant's representative, Amy Gunter, to come in to provide additional information.
So we're gonna start with Derek, right?
Yes.
Okay, that would be great. Let's hear from Derek.
Okay.
Hi, Derek.
Has there been any ex parte or conflict with this? Do we need to talk about that first?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm falling down on the job. Well, I do have an ex. I do want to talk about the fact that when was this? Sometime earlier this week, I called Piper to see if in the last discussion with the neighbors, particularly Mark Brolard, whether the issue of his concern about bias was addressed. And Piper said that, you know, that didn't come up because there's so many other issues on our plate. But I just wanted to let people know I made the decision to call him up and say that it was unfortunate that a disrespectful comment was made, and that we are working hard to continue to be impartial. And that's why you rightly raised the importance of ex parte conversations and being careful about recusals. So I'm not sure he felt any better, but I felt like that was a courtesy we could have provided to him. Do you have any other questions about that?
Yeah, I would request that. Did you have any aspect of that conversation that relates to the project that would have biased you in making a decision?
Oh, yeah. We talked about that, too. Yeah. No, I was trying to say he went into some of the same things he's put in his paper. And I referred to the minutes as saying, obviously, the Historic Commission is very concerned about the issues that they put forward in the recommendation. And so I don't think it's biased. It's pretty much no. And I think I talked, yes, we talked about it. And I was thinking, no, I just wanted to be transparent about the fact that I took the liberty of calling and saying that wasn't addressed. And there is certainly that as a commission, we certainly want to be respectful of public participation. So do you have any other questions, anybody? If not,
can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
I'm having a technical problem for some reason. Cool. I have everybody's photo on the right-hand side of my screen, and then a small Zoom screen, and I'm a little afraid to push back to meeting, but if I were to go away, can I use the email that I used to get back on?
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
So now I'm looking at Dale, but we should be seeing this project, right?
Not as of yet. I think.
Oh, okay.
I took it down. I'll put it back up.
This is Piper, and I need to recuse myself.
Oh yes, that's right.
From this, so I don't know if you'll see Beverly, but I have to recuse myself.
Yes,
this is a project I've been working on.
So you'll be in the attendees, I think.
Correct. But, yes.
Okay. Thank you. Very good. Thank you. So, Derek, if you want to start us off, that would be great.
Okay. So, as Brandon mentioned, this is one you saw last month, and your discussion. As Brandon mentioned, the project is a commercial subdivision, mixed use. And site design review approval, the commission discussion really came down to the three buildings that present to Hellman Street and how they sort of relate to the residential portion of Hellman directly across the street. So you see the elevations along Hellman and the renderings from the applicant as you viewed last month. And your recommendation was that you really saw no historical precedent for three nearly identical large buildings constructed side by side in a historic district. You noted the design and landscaping were excellent and it helped to mitigate that, but the designs were too repetitious and that emphasized this significant difference in height and character relative to the residences on the other side of Hellman. Commission had concerns that the height, scale, and massing of the three buildings as it relates to the historic district design standards in 1842.050B2 through B4 along Hellman Street for those three buildings was out of scale with the 1 to 1.5 story historic residential buildings across the street. And the commission asked that the designs be revisited to look at changing the height of individual stories that have about 11-foot ceilings as proposed, and potentially reducing the number of stories on at least two the in buildings, buildings 1 and 4. The commission also indicated that, in their view, if the buildings on Hellman were lower, the remaining buildings could cascade around the corner at Van Ness, as the taller buildings there would be mitigated by the grade change and the fact that there wasn't a single-story historic residential streetscape across Van Ness. And the commission finally indicated that they felt the designs would benefit from a greater variety of material treatment and finishes and greater variation in height and or number of stories to relieve monotony as they present to that Hellman streetscape. So the applicants made a number of proposals, changes to the proposals since you saw it last time. And I'm not going to go through all these that aren't directly related to the commission, but I think primarily to be aware is that the 8-lot partition has now combined lots 1 and 3 and 4 and 5. So it's now down to a 6-lot partition or subdivision. However, the same buildings are proposed in the same locations. They would just be condoed on these tax lots. So in terms of the buildings along Hellman, it really isn't changing in that sense. They've done some design changes to the buildings, and I've kind of copied their description of those changes here. If they're stepping the facade back to reduce the presence of the height, the roof line has been cut back to reduce the massing of the overhang. The center bay on buildings 3 and 4 steps back 3 feet for the third floor from the wall pane of the second floor, and a shed roof, you see here, has been added to emphasize that step back. There have been surface and material changes on buildings 3 and 4. A brick base has been added. Pedestrian overhang on the ground floor has been increased in length to add shadow lines and increase the pedestrian scale of the building at the sidewalk. White and lighter materials have been used on the third story to fade the building away, and open and wire mesh railings have been used instead of the solid panel before. So you see the building design for building number three that you looked at back in March with the changes here for their revisions in April. And then you've got renderings in the materials that show the changes to the buildings as they present to Hellman Street. And I just did the March elevation drawings alongside the April to give you an idea of how they still present to the street. And the cross sections that were discussed last time, which seem fairly well unchanged. I think in staff's view, really the key consideration here comes down to the discussion of transitional areas in the design standards. And that section of the design standards talks about for projects located at the boundary between zones or overlays, appropriate adjustments to building form, massing, height, scale, placement, or architectural material treatment may be considered to address compatibility, and I've added the emphasis there, with the transitional area while not losing sight of the underlying standards or requirements applicable to the subject property. And I think it's really about finding a balance between adjustments for compatibility with the designs and not losing sight of the underlying standards of the zoning district, that it is E1 zoned. In staff's preliminary assessments, we don't feel the design standards have gone far enough in making those necessary and appropriate adjustments to address compatibility, and more needs to be done with the building form, massing, height, scale, placement, architectural material treatment to better respond to the historic neighborhood context, but still keeping in mind the vision of the employment zone. Specific recommendations from the commission: either reviewing the revisions in terms of your previous recommendation or new recommendations will really help the Planning Commission as they review the revisions when they reconvene the hearing next Tuesday. And from there, I think I'd leave it to the applicant to more thoroughly discuss the changes they proposed.
Well, that was a very helpful overview. Thank you very much. So are we going to hear from Rogue Planning. Is Amy ready to speak? Thank you, Derek. That was really good.
Yep, no problem.
Yeah, so Amy should be joining our panel now. And you're currently muted, Amy.
Cool. Good evening, commissioners.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Amy Gunter with Rogue Planning and Development Services. Mr. Gil Livney, the property owner, is in the audience, to my understanding. I'm going to share a screen with you.
Amy, would Mr. Livney like to participate in this?
He sure would. Thank you.
I'll bring him over.
Can you see the screen?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, excellent. Okay. I'm going to run through this pretty quickly for you. Derek noted some of the major changes, but I wanted to speak to that the property is, as noted, directly adjacent to employment zone properties. There's employment to the north and the south. Then there's commercial zoning. There's also employment zoning further to the west. I'm sorry, east, with residential zoning to the west across Hellman Street. The property is at the cross section of three historic preservation districts. You have the Railroad Historic District across Water Street. To the south is the, it's off my screen, the Downtown Historic District, the Commercial Downtown Historic District. And then we have the Skidmore Academy District, where the building and the properties are located. It is important to note this before the uses of this site, specifically the historic context photos. When considering the zoning, that it's employment and it's adjacent to the adjacency to the residential zone, the historic context is very important. These are the historic buildings that existed in the vicinity of the residential zoning historically. It led to the zoning district of the area. The history is important in the context of the neighborhood development. It was formerly known as Mechanic Street. Central Avenue was, or I'm sorry, Van Ness was Mechanic Street. So the street along the north property line used to be known as Mechanic, and Factory was Central Avenue to the south. So very industrial street names for this employment zoned property. Obviously, much more industrial at that time, but that's the context of the zoning district and of the property. The proposed commercial development, we believe, can be found to be compliant with historic district design of commercial property, that the massing, the scale, the base, the center of entry of the proposed buildings are zoning compliant, historically accurate, and are a good mixed-use commercial development in an employment zone, which could have a much more large-scale, intense, larger traffic-generating type of use. It's a lower residential density with only 15 dwelling units per acre, which also reduces the parking that is both generated from the property and trips brought to the property. The strict use of the property as commercial or industrial could lead to a larger building area as required by the zoning district. A 25,000 square foot minimum floor area ratio requirement is what's required in this zone, across from 880 to about 1500 square foot residential homes. So we have to keep that context in mind when we're considering the proposed development. The proposed average heights of these buildings are less than the maximum height in the zone. So these are the overall modifications to the subdivision. Go through them really quick. 8 lots to 6, 8 condominium buildings. Reduces the frontage issues, no more solar setback waivers required. The detail site review plaza area is exceeded with the layout and the design. and then the historic district design compliance modifications. Derek spoke to those. But we have to consider the contrast and comparison of the site development of this zone and the immediately adjacent properties and those within the 200-foot impact area. And there's a pretty large disparity in the different types of buildings that are around this property. So for the historic district design standards, there's the transition zone compliance as well. And I feel that that needs to be looked at both ways. It needs to be looked at in that the design in this zone requires more of a commercial use, similar to what you find on 8th and 4th Street. And the zoning requirements provide for substantially more lot coverage, building height, mass, similar to the downtown zoning district that you find just to the south of this property. So though there's a residential use directly adjacent, we have to circle back to that there's in the historic district design standards a sort of lack of comparable development in those graphics when you're comparing a commercial development adjacent to a residential zone. And this property being in the transition zone appears to mean that the historic district design standards and strict compliance to those are more relieved to be compliant with the underlying zoning district of E1 versus, because that's more clear and objective than versus changing the zoning district to be more historically compliant. So we feel we've gone to meeting the historic district design standards for the base, mass, scale, height, step back, recesses on the corners, recessed entries, covered pedestrian areas of 7 feet instead of the basic 5. Your roof forms are all similar to residential while still being commercial for use. I want to speak to building 1. It was not proposed to be modified, but I wanted to give context to why that modification was not made. This is the view of it from the intersection. You have a Van Ness going down the hill on your left and Hellman on your right. This is the view from Hellman. And then this is 95 Van Ness, which was approved about 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago. It was a 3-story tall, 36 plus average foot, nearly 8,500 square foot structure. This is the facade of that building on Van Ness with little setback. This design is similar materials and facade treatments. And one would lead a project design team to believe that if this is approvable at one time, why isn't it approvable a few years later with a similar design, form, massing, scale, step back directly across the street from a residential zone? Derek showed this slide, which shows the slide, which has the March application in comparison to proposed building 3 and the revised elevation. You can see the larger overhang, the deck stepped back, there's fairly large outdoor spaces, there's railings to lighten the view of that deck, and then the third floor stepped back slightly, and there's a shed roof added to add interest and shading and variation to that roof line. You do have the close-ups of all the elevations. I know they're hard to see. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them. You have all of these in your packet of information. This is the previous, and then proposed, and I'm going to click back to that, but you'll notice the side view. What happened is that there was a step back and then the step back of the roof, which makes a fairly substantial reduction in that mass along the frontage. You can see that there's the second floor wall and then the third floor and the roof above. This is building 3 previous. Building 3, I don't know where it went, proposed. Okay, so we're going to move right on then past that slide. This is building 3's revised elevation. Here we have a rendering of building 4 with building 3 and building 1 down in the at the corner. The rendering of building 4. The doors were shifted from the previous application. Materials were changed. A brick base was added. There were the darkened materials on the ground floor to strengthen the base. And then the rhythm of openings, the windows on the ground floor, those still retain a commercial component. Okay, let's see. That is the previous. This is the proposed. There's a graphical error there. The modifications retain the similar uses of materials as proposed previously with different brick and stucco, a pressed metal type of wood material, and so forth. So we believe that it can be found that the buildings are historically appropriate in their context, that the architectural elements are found in commercial buildings in the historic district, and that there is a nod to the residential components while also considering the base zoning. I do have, if you want to see it, this is the open space slide. What changed really is that we really broke down the outdoor spaces that were already proposed and looked at all the features within those. And those appear to meet the detail site review plaza area requirements in all the elements that are proposed throughout those. And then this last slide is the one of the space and what it appears graphically, a representation of that central plaza area up here. One thing that I haven't said, and I don't know how I'm doing on time. Ooh, pretty good, 12 minutes. In our research of the property and the historic names, we think it would be a good nod to history to have our the public alley considered to be named Factory Alley. And then we've been calling it the Promenade, or we've been calling it, you know, Magnolia Terrace Walkway or something. But we're going to essentially start referring to our walkway as possibly Mechanics. So we're going to see if that's something that's allowed, if that's something that's possible to name a public alley to kind of harken back to what those streets were named back in the day. Are there any questions of me? Or Gil, did you want to speak?
I just want to mention that the building that was approved in 2018 was designed by me. It's a Magnolia building. It was about 4 feet higher or 5 feet higher than what we're proposing. And it was 30% bigger than what we're proposing. It was close to 9,000. We are proposing a 6,000 square foot building. Also want to mention, I mean, someone talked about energy. Those 2,000 square feet apartments probably will take less energy than 900 square feet historical home. I mean, those houses are very, very efficient. One thing that we did, I mean, I heard something about the 11 foot. It still looks like it's 11 foot. We'll make sure that it's not. I would make sure that it's going down at least a foot. We just need a clearance of 9 feet. So it's actually going to be probably lower than what you see now, you know. That's about it.
Okay. Would you like to add any more to your opening statement there, Mr. Livnia? Mr. Livni?
No.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And this would be a time, I think, to open it up to questions.
I would note that there is one member that signed up for public
comment. Oh, the public comment, yes.
So you can have questions of the applicant at this point, obviously. But before you go to deliberations, we'd like
Right. Absolutely. I wasn't sure whether we should do that first. But right now, since we've had the discussion of the changes, it might be useful to have people's questions.
But a question I have is a question of Gail or Amy is how much lower overall can that three-story building be? Or how much are you proposing it to be?
I mean, at this point, I think it's at 32 feet, that it's much lower than a three-story allowed. So basically, it will go at least another couple or 3 feet lower than what you see now. So 30 feet, again, the building before was over 36 feet. We are much lower than what we proposed and was approved before. But yeah, we're not going to have 11 feet ceiling, I could tell you that.
If the building height is reduced by 2 feet, the average height would be reduced for building three. Its average right now is like 36 point something. I'm not looking at the exact number. So it would be about 34 feet in average height if it came down 2 feet.
So building, I think Bill was indicating that it would be about two feet per floor.
No, my understanding is there's, if the floors are 11 feet on the second and third floor, those each reduced 1 feet, okay. 1 foot would be 2 feet total, because they need to have 10 feet of headroom so that when they put the HVAC ductwork in, they have ceiling height left over, 9 feet of ceiling.
Yeah, understood, yes.
Yeah, and one way also looking at that, on I think the second building, if the deck is a little bit look, I mean, we could also cut just on the third floor, we could bring the decks in a little bit. If it makes it look less massive, you know, it's another thing we could do.
So I'm understanding it was previously 40 feet, right? That you've reduced from
36.5 feet is the average height of that building, of building three.
All right. Okay. And that's the highest one?
No, that's just the one I'm speaking about right now, I believe.
All right.
I can tell you what building four is in just a minute.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
Okay.
They all vary slightly. They're roughly 36 to 38 and a half feet tall on average. The three on Hellman is what I'm speaking to.
Oh, so good.
Those three are all less than the 40-foot max average. 36 to 38.
That's helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's just the corner before was higher, just the one that was approved before.
I see. Okay. Any other questions? I have a question about how to understand the transition zone issue, because it's like trying to understand the relationship of the historic design standards to zoning, and is one take precedence over the other? I don't believe it does, but I'm just trying to understand what the goal of a transition zone compliance is. Brandon or Derek?
Derek can probably answer. I thought I'd pull up on the screen. I don't know. Can you see it currently?
Oh, yes. Yes. Good. That's great.
That is the section of code that we're discussing that states that for projects on the boundary between zones, appropriate adjustments to form, massing, height, scale, architectural material treatment may be considered to address compatibility with the transition area. And that is what's at play here, in that it is a transition between an R3 zoning on across from Hellman Street, and then the employment zoning here, as well as the transition between, as the applicant mentioned, a number of historic districts and other zones within the vicinity. But well, Derek, if you had anything to add.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I would say is, as I mentioned, I think it's finding a balance between
exactly
appropriate adjustments to those design elements but also keeping in mind, as Amy said, that the underlying zoning is E1. So I think if, you know, if you wanted to say, no, this has to be one story to be compliant with what's across the street, I think that's out of line with what that transitional zone is, or transitional area standard is saying. But if you're saying, are there ways to reduce the perceived height from across the street by stepping back the third floor or something like that, that's clearly, I think, what the type of appropriate adjustments that that's looking for is, trying to find tweaks that allow the applicant to develop at an E1 level while still trying to find ways to respond to that transition.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you. Anybody else?
Well, I would just say, if we're going downslope, but if you look at the old Parsons Pine building and the New Horizons woodworking building, they sit much lower. They're industrial buildings, but they tend to sit much lower, and it's mitigated because they're downslope.
Right.
It seems like this is, the way I see it is, it's incongruous, it's out of place to have these three-story buildings across the street from single-family residences. It's an issue that's come up time and time again. We've approved buildings that were higher, but it's an issue that's not going away. Like, we hear from the residents in that area. And if you think about where the sun comes from, if you think about the sun in the morning on the west side of Hellman Street, these buildings are going to be missing out. And it's not in the code. We have solar ordinances for the noonday sun, but these buildings are being blocked from the morning sun, and there's no code that prevents that. And it just seems like we're ignoring these residents on the west side.
And I think that reminds me of the point in the recommendations about this particular proposal with three identical, really large, tall buildings together in a historic district has no historical precedent in our work as a commission. So I think that's something the commission has to think seriously about as well, is that the designs itself, I think many people have commented how that's very well done. But once again, even that little example on what Brandon put up about the transitional, when you push the illustration of what to avoid, it was about height that was most telling. So anybody else have comments or questions or concerns?
Yeah, questions for the applicant would be best at this point, then yeah. Public comment, and then.
Okay, that's true. Yes, that's true. So if are there more questions? If not, I think we should hear from the people who are signed up to make public comment.
So I've invited in Mr. Benetti, who signed up to provide public comment.
Okay.
Should be joining in a second.
Thank you.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you.
Yes.
I'd like to go ahead and share my screen. Can I do that?
I believe so. Please do email me with anything that you are presenting, because it becomes part of the public record.
Okay, that's easy. I think he just got my voice, but hold on, let me turn this on. You might see my mugshot here. There we are. Okay. Greetings. Good evening, everyone. My name is Eric Benetti. I've been an Ashland resident since 1997. So that puts me in at roughly 25 years or almost a quarter of a century. We actually own the adjacent property on Water Street to Mr. Libney's project. Our address is 105 Water Street. And today I knew this meeting was coming up, so I thought it would be beneficial just to take a drive around and have a look, see what's going on. So I wanted to do that. Can you see the photos I've got here?
Yes.
Okay. So I started on Water Street. This is 77 Water Street. I believe the zoning is C1, which is a commercial zone, but this is not a commercial building. It's actually a completely residential building within a commercial zone, which I guess is interesting. Looking at it from the street level, it's the first floor is probably at least 4 to 5 feet off of grade, and then it goes up from there to three more stories, and then some type of pulpit right in the middle. Going down the street, this is actually our building here. It used to be Western Burner, very commercial industrial use. It was quite a mess when we purchased it, and we're currently leasing it to some folks that make materials for greenhouses. This is another look of the yard. It was interesting when I was looking at the renderings that they were showing tonight of Mr. Libney's building. I kind of thought we have a similar roof pitch on our commercial building. Nothing to be really proud of. It's a little bit embarrassing, to be honest, the amount of junk that's down there, but this is a commercial zone and it is an employment zone. And that's currently how it's being used. It would be nice to see this area revitalized. So I've lived in Ashland for, again, 25 years. And when I first moved to town, I lived right behind the Peerless in the railroad district. I've always enjoyed the railroad district. I like the diversity of the buildings. I can go get a coffee. I can get groceries. I can go to the hardware store. And this whole quadrant, this whole corner, since I've lived in town, has just been completely neglected in my mind. It's never been improved. 25 years later, we're just still staring at the same piece of dirt. And I think it's a good opportunity to uplift this area, bring in new employment, bring in new housing. And I think that's what they're doing. This next picture here is kind of an interesting one. We've had quite a bit of problems. We've owned the property for over 10 years. And during the summer months, all times of year, we have buses parked there. We have people having parties. We have things rolling onto the street. I've had to personally go down there and clean up booze bottles. My kids picked up trash, vomit. I mean, it's disgusting. So the parking there has been restricted from midnight to 5 a.m. You are not allowed to park there. And during the day, you're only allowed to park there for 4 hours. Talking to what's in this neighborhood, it is E1. And that extends all the way down under the bridge, all the way to Hersey. And these are some of the types of buildings that are there. And again, it's nothing exciting. It's nothing that's bringing any energy or any new employment. There's New Horizons, which does woodworking. And again, I just took these pictures today at 4. So that's what that building looks like. Something's happening on the backside of this building. I'm not sure what it is. I think it was some type of construction warehousing or staging for materials. This here is also in the E1 zone. Right in our same neighborhood, and they're doing a good job of collecting trash or operating some type of business. I'm not sure what that is. And I'm really just showing these photos to highlight that this is what's been happening here in this area for the last 25 years. And I'm really excited to see a project like Mr. Libney's come into place to change the whole character and basically extend the railroad district kind of into our neighborhood, and this carries into downtown, and it would just be a huge improvement. This is Southern Oregon Concrete Pumping. Again, they're one of our neighbors. And if we don't, I feel like as a citizen, if we don't approve a project like Mr. Libney, this is the type of stuff that's going to be remaining there for the next 25 years or till my kids are, you know, living here. Another interesting thing is when I was on Water Street, this is the Plaza Inn and Suites. And I don't see a lot of, I hear everybody talking about different materials and variations of facades and all this. And I look at this and I see 4 stories and it's all looks like to be hardy plank. So that was an observation. Here's another building on Water Street. doesn't look extremely exciting or historical, hardy plank, three stories. So that's it. It was interesting for me to see this on the presentation tonight. I know that the previous hotel that was adjacent, directly adjacent to our property, would have been much larger in scale. That had been approved. The building that was proposed by Jim Basser on the corner of Van Ness and Hellman, again, that was approved by the Historic Commission, and similar detailing materials, but it was a much larger structure. So I'm curious, and I'm trying to understand how this whole process works, like how the Historic Commission could approve a previous building like Jim Batzer's, and now they're giving Mr. Libney a little bit of grief. It's kind of my own thing. So personally, I think the designs that they've presented integrate well into the neighborhood. It would improve the neighborhood. You're asking somebody to not only have an employment district, but also provide housing. And I don't see how you can do that other than the way that he's, you know, designed to propose these buildings. So that was it.
Well, thank you. Brandon, is it appropriate now to ask questions? Or do we just listen?
Yeah, it's always appropriate to ask questions. I was referring to deliberating and making.
Right, because that's what I was doing wrong. Yeah, I got that part. But each public comment, we can ask questions and then move on to the next public comment, right? Oops, you're on the.
That was the only individual that I understand signed up to provide public testimony at tonight's meeting.
Okay.
And if you have questions for him, I can bring him back into the panel.
Okay. Anybody have questions?
The question that comes to mind, I believe that there's a close relationship between Gil and our previous speaker.
Well, I think the comment does provide interesting perspective from a business person, which we haven't heard from. That's, I think, a value. And I'm not familiar with the reasons. Maybe someone who's been on the commission for a long time knows why there seems to be disparities in previous approvals of buildings that seemed that were not the same height. But the point about having vacant property for a long time is probably very discouraging in general. I understand that. But are there any other questions for Mr. Bonetti? If not.
I have a quick question.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know if Eric can answer this, or maybe this is a Brandon question, but you mentioned residential and commercial. How much residential and commercial zone is there down there?
As far as I know, in the whole E1 employment zone within Water Street, I don't think there's any residential. It's all been commercial. And this is a
commercially E1. Commercially zone, but residential there?
Well, this is an E1, which is an employment district, but it has a residential overlay.
Okay.
And right. So Mr. Livney is looking to comply by building the residences above the commercial.
Understood. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? If not, then thank you very much, Mr. Bonetti, for your comments. And I should remind, I'm sure all of you saw that Brandon has forwarded public comments from many of the neighbors. I think most of them were on Hellman Street. Or I think so. Did everybody get a chance to review those? Some of them came in the last few days.
Yes.
And so if there's no other public comment, should we move into deliberations then?
There is the opportunity for the applicant to respond to the public comment received as a rebuttal.
Oh, okay.
So I am promoting Amy Gunter back in
Okay, very good.
5-minute rebuttal period.
Yeah, I'm going to have to write these stage directions down so I get it right.
I'm here.
That's very helpful. So, Amy, did you want to respond to anything, any of the concerns you might have? Did you get a chance to read the public comments?
I was unaware that there was additional public comments until
sorry about that.
Just now. So I can't really speak to them.
Well,
give me a second.
Sure.
I think Baker's comments, and then
another person.
Somebody forwarded me Ms. Gould's comments. Yes.
And those are the only new ones. And then there's a new statement. But correct me, any other commissioner, they're still focusing on the same problems of mass, height, scale, those kinds of things. So did you want to address that?
I guess my address would be that it's critical property owners pay attention to the zoning district in which they purchase property and the adjacent zoning districts. There's often a disparity between those zoning districts. There's a disparity in what they can do in those zoning districts as far as lot coverage, tree removals, parking, landscaping, et cetera. And this is a tough situation for a commercial developer to be adjacent to residential zones, and not just a residential zone where there's like an average house size of about, 2,000 square feet. There's really small Alibit historic homes. But we also must pay attention to how the zoning district came about. And it was because of very large commercial industrial developments that existed on these and in the adjacent area. And so, much like the people who bought into a lovely new subdivision that when they suddenly looked out their bedroom windows, they were looking at the backside of Shop and Cart and Bi-Mart, and they suddenly got quite upset. It's just sort of, it is what it is. And I empathize with people, but I feel that the building height will be reduced now about 6 feet below the allowed average height in the zone, which is 40 feet average. So the buildings could actually be taller than 40 feet. They are now going to be substantially less than 40 feet. We have to adhere to zero setbacks in the site design zone while being told we should set back the buildings to make them more comfortable to the residential zone, which is well over 60 feet across the street from this property. So there is a commercial building to the north that's about 5,000 square feet and occupies every square inch of the property. Then there's railroad tracks and there's an industrial zone. There's a single family home that is my husband's great, great, great auntie's single family home that will eventually become a industrially type of commercial development, or maybe not. Maybe it'll be a small residential home, but it will always be adjacent to commercial zone. So I don't want to sound callous, but it's really critical that people pay attention to their zoning districts. The historic district is important, and I feel that these buildings have been altered to do their best to comply with the intent of the historic district design standards while being mindful that we're adjacent to a very commercial district of the downtown, which seeks buildings like this, property line to property line, little facade breakups, so forth. And we're trying to marry that with a residential zone, an industrial zone, a multiple historic districts. So it puts a property owner in a pickle when we start talking about potentially cutting off stories of buildings and so forth. So I will end my discussion there. I feel the transitional zone is the basis of this. What's the underlying zoning, and then how do we apply historic district design standards on top of that? Thank you.
Thank you. It is very complicated. And in terms of this transitional zone compliance. So thank you for making those comments. Does anybody have any further questions for Amy before we go into deliberation? Oh, she disappeared. But if not.
I'm still here. I'm just trying to maintain internet capabilities.
Oh. Well, okay. What's the sense of the group? Would the group like to move into deliberation then? Since we've talked about the public comment that we've received this week. Anybody have an objection to doing that?
No.
Okay, then I think we should thank you to all the people who spoke to this planning action. And we will begin our deliberation. And as I understand it, Brandon has been trying to instruct me about the process of these meetings. And so to be clear, the people who spoke to us and about this planning action will still be able to hear our deliberations. It's just that we can't have any exchange back and forth between the commission members and those panelists. Is that correct?
That's correct. After you've gone into the deliberations to
yes.
go back and forth.
Okay. Because we remain, we have public meetings still, of course. So who would like to begin? Don't all speak at once. You know, that makes the meeting last longer when we have these long pauses. I'm just going to say.
So I think I would just interject just an observation. And from living in town, living in a municipality for a long time, the business of the city or the municipality is to create tax lots and to make revenue. That's their business. And in that way, the rules are stacked against the individual residents and kind of stacked in the favor of the developer. And I think that's what we're essentially seeing here. We're seeing this incongruity in building height between the commercial industrial zone and the residential. And the rules are stacked against the neighbors who are in opposition. Not that we can do anything against that, but I've seen that happen time and time again on historic, and even prior to when I was on historic, often the concerns of neighbors are overlooked because the odds are stacked against their favor.
Now, was the transitional zoning maybe a staff person could answer that. Did the transitional zoning with, in this case, a commercial zone with a residential overlay, if I understand it, is that intended to reduce the problems that Bill is just talking about? Because what I heard from Derek is it's a good faith effort to try to work with the residential's people's priorities as well as the business person's priority for developing property. But I think your point is important. I just don't know how people feel about this particular met because it's a large number of buildings together.
And I would just say, on the staff side, I think that transitional zone language was added when we did an update to the code, looking at the historic district design standards, probably about 10 years ago when I staffed the commission. And I think it was really added, as I said, trying to recognize that there does need to be a balance, that it's trying to figure out what adjustments to the design are appropriate while not losing sight of the fact that that is E1 zoned. So it's not looking to make the E1 zone property comply with the residential zoning standards across the street. It's looking at how can you adjust the design elements within the E1 zone to make them more compatible and more responsive to that neighborhood, immediate neighborhood character.
And so in effect, it is finding a balance among competing interests in this case.
I think that's it. Yeah. And I think it recognizes what the applicant was saying about the underlying zoning and what that intends, but it also recognizes that there should be the ability to make appropriate adjustments. And that's, I think, where you come in determining what adjustments are appropriate.
Right. So, like all things complicated and with finding a balance is always a matter of degree. And I think it seems like the applicant feels strongly that tonight I heard Amy making the case that the historical context was significantly more commercial and that, but I don't know how that stacks up against the way the development has the neighborhood has developed over time. So, and does anyone understand why there is this reference to a project that was approved that had higher?
Well, we did have concerns about that. We ended up approving it because it was permitted, but
it was permitted by the zoning, right?
Yeah, but all of us had concerns about the height.
Oh, okay.
Or and, I believe all of us had concerns about the height.
Was that communicated then? Did you put that in? Well, it doesn't matter. I don't want to get too bogged down in that. But it's still balancing the design standards against the zoning standards, it sounds like. Does anybody have any illuminating ideas about finding that balance?
I think what I see is that we've been rather timid about how we assert ourselves here. I think we should be more forthright, more compelling about our recommendations. I do see it as being a problem that we're going to have not just three-story, but three-story buildings with 11-foot ceiling height next to these very, very small residences across the street.
Right. And I share that concern. So I'm wondering, we haven't heard from you, Sam. Do you have anything to offer on this subject?
Well, I don't love the project. I mean, we have three almost identical buildings across from historic houses. I think our hands are probably tied, but I wish they weren't, because personally, down on Water Street, where there are other commercial buildings and things, I have no problems.
Right. But,
speaking as someone who lives in a historic home, I would not be happy if this were happening in my neighborhood. So I understand completely how the people feel whose homes are going to be affected. And they are going to be affected.
They are. Oh, thank you for that. And what about you, Keith? You have any?
Well, yeah, I'm sitting here looking at the drawings, you know, in our packet, you know, AO.4 that show the elevations of the buildings. And I kind of agree with what's been said here. It's a challenge because I think that one of the things that other buildings up and down the street that are also tall, they stand alone. We're talking about three buildings here that though the developer has, you know, really tried to work with us and change textures and, you know, whatnot to comply, lowering the height. You know, if you look down the street, they all look similar. It's like having a cookie cutter with just different frosting on them. And I don't know, it just seems, I understand that the idea of building similar buildings keeps costs down. And right. You know, it's like, of course, but the challenge is that we have a lot of buildings going under this corner, and these three on Hellman look very similar as where the center, you know, of the buildings project out and the sides recess in with balconies, and they're a little bit different, but, you know, really when you look down the street, it's going to look like three big apartment buildings, you know, and I know that they're trying their best to make this a successful project, but I don't know what else we can do because we've kind of laid the groundwork to try to get as much change as possible, but I'm feeling like there's not a lot we can demand.
As an advisory group, though, I share your observations that the applicant is trying to accommodate our concerns.
Absolutely.
But the applicant's interests in property is different than residents' interests. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what we talked about balancing. And I think as long as those three buildings, like you say, all close together with that amount of height, it's going to have a significant impact. Because I spent a lot of time walking around the neighborhood this morning myself, and it was hard to visualize what it would look like to be walking across the houses on Hellman with such massive structures.
But at the same time, it's like I think that Amy's point about the fact that, you know, when you're a homeowner and you're buying property and you become, you know, used to the way your streetscape is, but it's zoned differently, and there's always the opportunity for change.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's a tough pill to swallow. I don't know, you know, any sugar coating that's going to really help that, because I think, again, it's like the whole residential overlay idea is to try to mitigate that. And I think they are trying. It could be much worse, but it is. But
I also think it could be much better.
Well,
so, no doubt. So that's why I think that it's legitimate to say that there should be attention to zoning requirements, but that's why the idea of transitional zoning is that it's a matter of, you know, we've used the word balance, but it's also a matter of degree of how much, how high and how massive, and what some have called cookie cutter approach. That is part of it as well.
So what are we supposed to try to accomplish here?
So what we need to decide is, are we going to approve, what we need to decide is, do the changes that the applicant made conform to the recommendations? And I would remind everybody, the recommendations, as was spoken about earlier, talks about this being a precedent in terms of the scale and mass of close to residences. It does not seem to be conforming to the design standards of the historic district. But you have three recommendations, and that they have a lot to do with height, scale, massing, and greater variety of materials and variations in height or number of stories to relieve the monotony. So I think if people feel strongly that the applicant has met those recommendations, then I think there would be a vote to approve it and forward it on. Or we can say we don't think, that's my understanding, that we don't really believe the current the modifications meet the intent and the words of this statement of recommendations.
I'd like to chime in if that's okay.
Absolutely. I was going to ask for you.
This is Dale speaking. So first of all, I'd like to thank the applicants for a great presentation in terms of their documentation. You know, I think it was wonderful to understand the building as well as they were depicted with all the, especially the perspectives and color. So thank you for that. And I also like to thank the applicants for the proposed building design modifications since we reviewed the project last month. I think that most of the incremental changes are effective in addressing some of our concerns regarding the building facade and pedestrian amenities, but fall short in addressing our major concerns from our previous meetings, which was the height, scale, and mass of the buildings. The massive development of 8 fairly identical cookie cutter designs has no precedent in Ashland or in our historic districts. I don't think this commission should approve a project that has demonstrated such disregard, in my opinion, in our attempt to comply with our historic standards and the scale of our city and that neighborhood in particular. Those 3 buildings facing Hellman Street with a height of up to 40 feet and 3 stories will overwhelm mostly single-story historic residences across the street. These proposed buildings have failed to offer an appropriate scale and facade compatibility to the adjacent historic streetscape. Additionally, the 0 setback to the sidewalk exacerbates the building mass and will overwhelm the adjacent pedestrian traffic. In my opinion, the building architecture and landscape design in this project is very attractive and of the highest quality, and I applaud them for that. They just don't fit with the historic district residences on Hellman Street. For these reasons, I will not vote in favor of moving this application forward.
May I make a comment?
Sure.
A few years ago, maybe 10, we were faced with the same kind of mass project on Lithia. And of course, that is definitely very much a commercial zone. There aren't little old houses across the street. And Mahar's people listened to us, and they built 3 very attractive buildings connected, but the 3 buildings look totally different. Each building has their own identity. They've made some minor changes, but if you look at the buildings they're proposing to be built on Hellman, they're 3 of the same building with maybe just little minor things change. And I agree completely with Dale. I can't see moving this on.
And Brandon, does that mean if we don't want to move it forward, we essentially are voting to approve or not approve again, right?
Right. You're making a recommendation to the Planning Commission for their consideration.
Okay.
And your recommendation right. Reflect the decision of the body.
And, I think I appreciate that Dale's statement. And I think, Dale, would you be willing to make that a motion? And then we could move, if there's further discussion, but we could move to a vote.
I'd be happy to do that if the other commissioners might want to comment on whether that's appropriate or not for.
Go ahead. I'll
chime in. I appreciate your clear vision of the challenge before us, Dale, and I agree with you. And I would certainly support that, because I just think that we need to be very careful here. And as much good faith effort the developers have put forward, it's just not making it. And I think that we need to have a higher standard.
What about you, Bill? I would agree with both of the people who spoke. I would agree.
I thought I might be a lone voice, but when Dale put it so succinctly and so precisely, I agree with that and would hope it would be the consensus of the committee here. I'm not opposed to the project, but I think the scope and scale on Hellman needs to be much, much lower.
So I think Dale has, that's been very helpful to articulate it and maybe have that be a motion as you stated it. And I agree with the points that were made too. I agree that the applicant is trying to do meet his best interest in promoting more businesses there, but it does set a precedent that it doesn't sound like many of us are willing to want to allow at this point. Is that a good way of saying it? Maybe. So let's Dale. It sounds like there is a consensus for you to go ahead and make that motion.
Okay. So I move that planning action PAT 2022-00037 be denied for the statement I just read.
Right.
And I think that it is not compatible in those ways.
Right. Is there a second for that?
Second.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Any final comments?
I have a question.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes. I haven't been on the Historical Commission for years past, like Sam obviously was, and I think Dale
was.
I'm just a little bit confused because, you know, I think it's been mentioned by the in the public statement and also by several commissioners here that other properties have had similar traits and features and characteristics that the Historical Commission has indeed approved previously. And I think that goes to Bev, what you mentioned when you commented after Eric spoke. So although I'm not a voting member, I do understand that, you know, there were modifications to the proposal that were indeed made. And I'm just confused with previous buildings which were approved by the Historical Commissions with very similar features and characteristics, yet this one doesn't seem to kind of measure up. So I think it would be fair to outline specifically, you know, what didn't measure up. I know Dale had prepared something which kind of suggested to me that even before he came here, he was going to vote against it. So I don't know. I just be objective and to give everyone their due piece, I think it would only be fair that you guys outlined for the applicant the reasons as to why things are unapproved.
I agree with your point that that's why I was asking about past approvals, but I think when you look at the recommendations that we put forward in the last meeting, my sense of the group is that it hasn't met the standard of the height and the scale. And I think you guys who are in the field in building and architecture, the massing is related to the cookie cutter part. Is that, would that be fair? Dale, what do you think?
Sure, I think that sets it apart from any other development we've ever looked at.
That's what I was thinking. So,
and I think that my statement is pretty clear about where we see the problems.
Right.
We've pretty much been talking about Hellman Street.
And I think your statement is pretty much incorporates the recommendations that were there. And it's a matter of not of our, I'm sensing the consensus is that our concerns with those issues of height, scale, and massing are the problem still. So,
Can I interrupt for just a second, please? Just a comment. The other buildings that have been approved have been a building.
One Here building.
We have three buildings lined up that right. are alike, and that's a big part of the objection.
So the it's legitimate question Councillor Moran had about do you see that we need to change any of these recommendations that we had included with the last time? Or are we in effect saying that we don't think the recommendations have been met by the modifications and that's why we are not approving the project? Does anyone have an opinion about that?
I don't think they've done much to compromise in this regard. I feel like stepping back the upper stories or eliminating a story would be a large concession in this case. But and I know it's a large concession because it means reducing revenue.
Absolutely.
But I just feel like this is not something that we should subject the neighbors to on the west side of Hellman Street.
So is there, you know, thinking of the concern given by Mr. Benetti earlier about the unfortunate aspect of leaving that lot vacant, are we wanting to shape the motion has been put forward to not approve it because of the remaining problems that were identified in the recommendations, but is there something we could articulate for the applicant about what the priority issue is? For example, Sam pointed to one and others have talked about it. Is the three identical buildings being right next to each other? And that if that along with the height were addressed, those are priorities. Anybody have an opinion about that?
So for me, the height is the main issue, like the disparity in height.
In height. And what about, anybody else have, would they say that?
Yeah. I would like to say that I think it's not just the height, it's the consistency of the same height.
Yes.
Is a challenge because that messes with your sense of proportion in the buildings. And when you look at the diagram, I think that Derek or Brandon put up that has like, what are the do's and don'ts?
It shows
one building that is overlooks not three. I mean, so that's the right. Don't is don't have one building. In this case, we have three. And it's just that the similarity in height and the impression of the buildings from the street, I think, make a big difference. And regarding the previous project that was approved, we worked with the Batzers, you know, for a long time and very hard to make their project something that we would approve, and we still had problems with it, but it was a long way to go. And I could be wrong because my memory isn't what I wish it was, but I think that the neighborhood was better about articulating their concerns this time, and certainly being heard and taken into account. And the points they made were worth considering at this time. We passed that project before. It never got done. This is a new project. This is a chance to look at it with new eyes and try to go by the same standards and try to, you know, make it work for the community.
Right. And the Historic Commission is, the Planning Commission is the body that deals with zoning questions.
Yeah.
And we're really, we've been given the directive to focus on design standards. And it seems to me that I think when Dale, you used the word cookie cutter in your statement, right? That what Keith just mentioned is important, which is it's not the fact that one building, and the same thing was mentioned by Sam, it's the three buildings, all the same height and the same dimension, right?
But it also is the other five. This is an eight building proposal.
Right.
And that's quite unique for this town or in Medford. I don't know of any place that I've seen locally that looks something like that. Maybe big cities, but and then, so, you know, we're also trying to protect the integrity of our historic resources.
Yeah. And I think the important thing to note here is also that on the lower part of the lot, the height is not an issue.
Right.
It's not an issue for any residents or anyone in the neighborhood. It's those lots on Hellman Street, and they are an issue.
Yeah. Right. And I think I appreciate the history, too, that Sam provided about the fact, like the downtown buildings, there was still more variation in those buildings than what you're seeing here. So, if people are ready to vote on the statement that was made, that we believe the standards that are important to integrity of a neighborhood are not being met in this particular proposal, I think if everybody's okay, I would call for a vote. And all those in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Has everybody voted? Yes. And all those that are opposed? Okay. So the vote carries. And a time check, it's already 2 hours. And so let's see if we can, this was surely the most complicated.
Okay. 5-minute break.
Yes, I think that's
a recess, maybe, you know, there might be a reason for it.
You think? Might be. Okay, so let's take a 5-minute break. And then okay. I think we can do these others fairly fast. Thanks, you guys. Okay. Hey, Brandon, are you there? Maybe Brandon. Oh, yes, there you are. The next one is going to be the 247 7th Street. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And that's actually a very small.
Yeah. And Rogue Planning is, again, the applicant on that. So I'll bring Amy Anderson.
That's what I was going to ask. Who's there to speak? Okay.
I can start a timer when she begins.
Yes. well, and for our we're not cooperating very well. So they're hard issues. Okay. Let's see if everybody else is about ready. Should I read the description on this then, you think?
How's it going? Yeah. That's fine.
Okay. So we are looking at the planning action PAT 1 2022 00179 247 7th Street, and it's a request for a conditional use permit to expand an existing non-conforming structure by approximately 30 square feet. The existing building was constructed prior to current regulations and encroaches into a 6-foot side yard setback. In the area of this encroachment, there is a small bathroom, and the applicant's requesting to enlarge it to increase the floor area and headroom. So the proposed addition is approximately 29.75 square feet, of which approximately 19.2 square feet encroach into the setback. And I think that's all. So do we want, shall we hear from Amy on behalf of the applicant?
You know, Derek Severson again is here as far as the staff presentation. It is a very straightforward project. So if you had anything to add, Derek, aside from the materials on the packet, now would be the time, and I'll invite Amy.
Yeah, this one looks like a piece of cake compared to what we've been doing.
Brandon, you can start the timer now. How long is it?
Yeah. So, okay.
As Beverly mentioned, this is an addition that extends into the side yard setback. So it's a conditional use permit for a modification of a non-conforming situation, but the addition is less than 2 feet into the setback and 10 feet 6 inches. You can see in the illustration provided by the applicant, it's right there. It's less than 30 square feet, and less than 20 square feet of that is in the setback area. So in staff view, this was really de minimis. And in an ideal world, it's not one we would have even had to notice, but but we've jumped through that hoop, and we're certainly supportive of the request. It seems to be well thought out, and I think...
Yes, in the description and the papers were presented clearly. So this is much easier to deal with. Thank you, Derek. Is Amy ready to come back?
She's been invited in, but it looks like she's unmuting now.
Okay.
Here.
Oh, hi, Amy. You want to take another opportunity to inform us about this project, which is much less complicated, to say the least?
Give me a second to share my screen. Right, this proposal is much more simple. Jean and John Barnier, the property owners, are in attendance, as is Carlos Delgado and Tom Sager, the architects.
It's a very straightforward application. The request is to add on to the south side of the residence to allow for a minor increase in floor area, to allow for better headroom in a remodeled bathroom area. The property has been going through a pretty substantial, historically compliant renovation. They removed some non-conforming structure area and then added a detached garage structure with an accessory unit in the back. And now they're going to begin the remodel of this front structure. With this small addition that you can see here on the screen, highlighted in yellow. And then Carlos and Tom did a great job of creating some graphics that made it really clear what was being done.
Yeah.
So I can talk and talk all night long, but I'll end it there.
Well, 30 square feet is probably not, that's one of the smaller additions, wouldn't you say?
But it is. It would be a de minimis addition.
Yeah, a de minimis. That's right. I noticed that word. Anyway, are there any questions? Or would there be any questions first? I think it was very clear. And if there are no questions and it's as clear as it seems, would someone want to move to approve this?
I will make a motion to approve. Planning action T1-2022-00179.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Great. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And no, the same. Okay, so thank you. That expedited that. Thank you, Amy, for hanging in there. Now we move on to the project on these now we're moving from planning actions to what do we call it? The pre-app review. So I've learned that the pre-apps are a good opportunity for the Historic Commission to provide input before the applicant makes a formal application. So that seems good to know if there's questions or recommendations. I suppose I should read I don't know if I have that one in front of me. Oh, because we're looking at 160 Lithia Way. I have the project narrative, but I don't have the planning action. You don't need any description, right?
Yeah, so currently there's not a planning action that's been filed. Correct. This is a preliminary step to submitting a formal application where the applicant puts forth their concept, often in a 90% stage. But before they submit a formal application, the Historic Review Board would typically look projects. And as such, because this is a high profile location on Lithia Way, we felt it would be advantageous for the commission to have the opportunity to speak to the applicant as well as the applicant's architect. So I'm bringing both Ray Kistler and Amy Gunter into the meeting now.
This one too. Okay. Gosh, she's got a busy night. Okay. Yeah. So the applicant will speak first? Is that what you just said?
Well, again, this is an opportunity, if you've had an opportunity to look at the design schematics, but the applicant can give you some background information on what they're going to be proposing.
Right.
And if you have any questions or comments for them, it would help them as they put together their formal application.
That's right. That's what I understood. So has everybody seen the project narrative? Those of you who are skilled in looking at blueprints, which I'm not, but are there the narrative actually addresses a lot of the same issues we've been spending our time talking about, because they said they tried to reduce the perceived mass of the building, more closely match the scale of the adjacent buildings, because this is a four-story building between two three-story buildings. And they're also working on making the roof structure more open. So those of you who've looked at the elevations, do you have any questions for the applicant or concerns? Oh, that's a good view. Is that clear? I didn't see that. Okay. Which building is it now that we're looking at?
The proposed building would be the brown one between the white and the beige.
All right. Thank you.
Behind the Volkswagen.
Bus in front.
We approved a building to this site a few years ago. Right, Amy?
That is correct. This proposal, I'm sorry, I'm choking on some water. At least I'm not on the screen as I'm choking out here. Okay. This building is proposed to be called The Vine. It is similar in size, mass, scale as to the previously proposed three-story building. The biggest change here is the addition of what would be the fourth level that you can see up above. That is it's 55 feet to the top of the parapet. So that requires a conditional use permit because you can go up to 55 feet with a conditional use permit in the downtown zone. And so that's probably the largest change. And then there were some material changes. The previous building was, I would say, ornate in its embellishments and material choices. And this building proposal has a more stripped down materials. There's less, flair, and it's more similar in materials to what's happening on the Jasmine building and the Kendrick building that it's adjacent to. And Ray, feel free to chime in at any moment. The Vine is proposed to be 14,500 square feet. That is for the first two floors, or the first three floors, I'm sorry, and then the 4,217 square foot rooftop deck members lounge area. The ground floor commercial area is comprised of 1,436 square feet of parking at the rear of the alley accessed off of Will Dodge Way. And then in front of that is a 3,085 square foot ground floor commercial space to meet the 35-65 commercial residential split. There was a proposal originally for residential use of some of the hotels. Now it's all hotel use, so there's not the split requirement. But the parking is back there for the hotel uses because they require parking, whereas commercial building uses typically do not.
Okay.
This is the elevation view from Lithia Way. The written documents don't go through all the findings yet, but we'll go through those in the staff or the applicant's findings. We'll go through those in the actual application. But it talks largely about like the height and the massing and stepping parapets and dissimilar heights to adjacent buildings. This building has more of a setback than typical because of the angling of the property, but it's at the property line where it can be, and then the property line sweeps away from it. There is a plaza area in front of the building. Previously, that was a required plaza area. That plaza area is now not required, but it's still provided. Brandon, if Tom Lamore is in there.
There is a Tom as a participant. I'll go ahead and move him over. I would note, you mentioned the elevation. We're still seeing the rendering.
Oh, I'm over here clicking away in my slideshow, okay. Not showing it to you guys. That's why you can't see what I'm looking at. Just giving myself my own presentation.
Yeah. If you could stop your share and start again, that would probably resolve it.
Okay, let's see. Now do you see it?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm not going to repeat everything I said, no. But essentially there's a corner of the building that touches the property line. And then we have here, and then this is the plaza area. Will Dodgeway is at the rear. It's a one-way alley. There's the parking. There is a space in between that's a required, it's a deeded pedestrian access way. So this space between that currently exists will remain and be sort of enhanced on this property side. And then the property is directly adjacent to the Kendrick building next door. Let's see, there are some transformers, electrical bolts, so forth in the alley. Those will remain at the back of the building. Now let me get you the elevation. There you go. This is the elevation view from Lithia Way. The rooftop deck, I think it depicts sort of heavily in these sorts of line drawings. The perspective drawing shows how light and airy I see it. It doesn't seem like a big, heavy fourth story mass up there because of it's stepped back from the edge of the building itself. There's, Tom, can you correct me? I believe there's 5 feet.
Yes. I don't know if you all can hear me, but
yes, we can.
Okay,
hear
good. My camera doesn't appear to be working, so you can't really see me out of it. But anyway, yeah, Amy's done a good job at describing this. The intent is, the intent is to break down the mass, as Amy mentioned. The elevation view really doesn't show it well. And since this elevation view that you're looking at was done, and we built the model, the 3D model of it, it gave us a better sense of, okay, we need to really break down the mass even more for these stairwells. That's what you see, those two large elements on the ends. One is strictly a stairwell, and it had a storage room. That one that she's pointing at had a stairwell and an elevator to reach the fourth level. And so what we did is we brought the top of that elevator shaft down to the bare minimum. And it is the highest element because of requirements inside the hoistway. The stairwells we brought down to the minimum that we could. So both of those masses you see are really stepped down even more and broken down more. The intent, as I understand it from the owners, is to utilize this as an open deck that will be, it will help support some of the functions that they will use inside the building. They are winery owners, and they have a membership, and one of the levels, perhaps the third level on this, will become sort of a members lounge and have storage lockers for the members. And their intent is to perhaps also allow them the use of the top deck. So that top fourth level is really for private use. It won't ever be for public use. It won't be an open bar for public use, but it will be for small functions or for gatherings of the members. And so we've done our best to try and keep it as open as possible. Yeah, we've shown a little wine bar up there and all. And some of this we've taken liberties on because I think the owners themselves aren't completely sure exactly how they're going to use it. I think their intent is to kind of test the waters here and see if the Historic Commission would even be receptive to this idea. So that's kind of where we left it. Where Amy was kind of pointing, you can see the stairwells better. We considered taking away the storage room on the other side, and the elevator and the stair on the other side will have to remain. Surrounding the seating area that you see is just open glass railing. It's a tempered glass. It only goes up about 42 inches. Again, it provides the required protection, but it makes it just very light. Part of this middle area, you can kind of see columns through there. It's to support a roof structure to at least protect it in inclement weather. but the north and west, the, I guess it would be the north and the south sides, will open up a bit more into kind of a trellis work. Again, giving a more open feel to it. So let's see. That's the main ideas. It didn't quite show as well on this view, but the top two stories of this will be brick faced. That hasn't been chosen yet, but we kind of were thinking in terms of the mocha latte colors. And the bottom story, the first story, is going to be a concrete block, but it's a ground face block. And I believe we featured that on a building across the Lithuoid, directly across on, I believe, two of those buildings. And it would either be lighter or darker. The color that's shown isn't, it was just a function of the program, I think, didn't show as well. So we will work on that. But so anyway, this gives you an idea of kind of where we're headed with it. And we just would really love to hear your opinions on it. See if we're headed in the right direction.
Can I jump in, Tom? This is, yes, Ray Kistler. If you go back to that top floor plan.
The floor plan of the building?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I just want everybody to be aware that the top floor deck is set back quite a ways from the front of the building. That's the front of the building where the parapet is, and you can see where the glass railing is right there. Mm-hmm. To help to minimize the fact that it's a fourth level up there. That's one thing. Another item I wanted to point out is that the ground floor is still just open retail. It's we don't have a tenant for that yet. The whole ground floor is exactly, well, the whole building is exactly the same as what was approved during the building recession when there just was no money around to build what we were hoping. So what has changed in this building from what you previously saw a few years ago was that I wouldn't say we stripped down the facade at all. I think what we did do is we went from a red brick to a brown brick, and we took off the circle top windows on the third floor and just went with square windows, rectangular windows, without the circle tops. But the massing, the footprint, where the windows are, the floor plan, everything else is identical to what you've already approved up to the top of the third floor. And then we've added the roof deck to that. So
there were those balconies, the Juliet balconies on the front windows?
Yes, we did have Juliet balconies before. And now we just have windows. We might put the Juliet balconies back on it. The owners have been on the fence about that off and on, so I'm not sure where they will land. So we just took them off to be safe. But that's kind of it.
Okay.
From where we were last time.
Yeah, which was in 2012. Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right.
That's a long time ago. So, right. How about giving some of you who've looked more carefully? I like the fact of how they're disguising the extra floor. Well, not disguising it, but making it less imposing. It sounds like an attractive building. I'd rather hear from some of you who read blueprints.
Well, I kind of I appreciate also that an idea of eliminating the Juliet balconies, because I don't really see the necessity of those, and I kind of don't see that as a historic detail on buildings in a downtown area. Having that upper deck, I'm okay with it being the height and the fact that it's an open seating area. I think the view towards the hills from there are spectacular, and taking
Yeah.
Want to take advantage of. So I think it's a nice looking design, and I'm kind of happy with what they've done.
Anyone have a differing opinion about it?
I would concur. I think it's a place where we need to fill in the blank. There's a hole in that side of the street that needs to get filled in, and they seem to be doing it in an appropriate way. If you look at the adjacent buildings and the color and the height and so on, and buildings across the street and everything around it, it tends to fit in very well.
Yeah, I would agree. Sam and Dale, what do you
think? I liked it a decade ago whenever we approved it before, and I like it even better.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's varied from the other buildings next to it and across the street. I think it's a nice project.
And Dale, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I agree. I like the plaza space on the street widening out for seating, and I'd be only disappointed that top level deck wouldn't be available for a glass of wine for the public.
Oh, yeah, me too. I can't wait.
let me be clear. The top deck is for the public. The third floor is membership.
Oh, okay.
Oh, good. So the members lounge. Okay. Well, that gets everybody more excited yet. So I think with there seems to be a consensus that this is a very attractive project. Anybody want to make a motion to approve it? What do we do at this stage of where it's pre-app?
Yeah, so at this point, you don't make a recommendation or a motion to approve because no application has been filed. But you were giving guidance to the applicant as to any changes that you'd like to see, but it sounds like you didn't need to provide that. So their next step would be to submit a formal application, and it would come back to this body as well as the Planning Commission for a final decision.
Okay. So so the minutes could reflect that there seemed to be a consensus that this was well designed.
Yeah, we would see when they come back the finishes, like what are the colors of the brick and the masonry block and stuff like that.
Okay, the materials and stuff.
Yeah,
I think it's got a great look. Well, thank you to everyone who spoke to this, and good luck with the next phase.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
So now we can move on to another pre-app, the final one, which is on A Street. And do we have people?
Yeah. So I'm currently inviting in Mr. Hoxmeyer, Steve Hoxmeyer, who is the owner of the property on A Street. And first of all, I'd like to thank him for his patience. I told him we could probably tune in around 7 or so. But nonetheless, he should be joining us.
That was ridiculous if you said 7. Anyway, sorry about that. Okay, so this is the owner of the property.
So if you can hear me, I've requested that to promote you to panelist. And I think that you have to accept that request to join. And it looks like you have. Thank you.
So who wants to speak first?
Thank you, Mr. Hoxmeyer.
Okay, Mr. Yes. Hoxmeyer. Okay. Welcome. Thank you for waiting.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. And we can see you too.
Well, this is the first time on Zoom.
Oh, is it? You're doing well.
We haven't started, but we're here.
But is there anything you want to call our attention to on your application?
Well, I hope everyone's had a chance to go by the yoga center the way it is now.
Right. I have. It's a great view back there, too.
Because then you know what it's really might look like, because it will be made of the same style, same materials, just extending it towards A Street.
Okay.
This was done with the hope of getting a grill to go with a cafe.
Oh, there's a cafe currently then.
Yes.
Oh, I forgot
about. It used to have a grill.
I see.
But it was not in a safe place.
Oh.
I want to put it in a safe place, but that means a hood. And that almost means a complete enclosure. And then that means I have to do the upstairs.
Okay.
So that's what led me to this design.
So you can't see the design I'm sharing currently, which was submitted in your packets?
Yes.
Let's try. Thank you.
I've tried I'll be moving that awning over the downstairs rather than the upstairs. So there'll be a little more focus on the commercial frontage of the building.
So you're talking about doing this in three phases, right?
Yes. I'm jumping right to phase two with this.
Are you? Yeah.
With this request.
And I guess, did you put these drawings together?
Unfortunately, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, so does everybody who is trained in the area find these enough information on these drawings? Those of you who...
I would note from a staff perspective that these drawings are adequate for a pre-application discussion that you're having in terms of the concepts that Mr. Hoxmeyer is putting forward. When it does come to a formal application and ultimately a building permit, because it is a commercial space, it will require a design professional to submit those drawings.
Okay.
And at that level of detail, you'd be able to measure the, you know, siding, the trim around the built windows or doors, and other details that may not be evident in this illustration.
So at this point, the commission is looking more at the overall concept, and
In recognition that he's intending to make it compatible with the existing building. Right. Obviously, if you visited the site, you could envision a two-story volume in that location.
Right.
And hopefully you'll be able to give him some guidance at this point so we can put together a formal application.
Bless you, whoever that was.
Excuse me.
Are there any concerns about the project plan as it's, I mean, I think I understand what Mr. Hoxmeyer is trying to do here.
I think it'd be important to, you know, have more scale drawings so we could really look at the relative size of windows and elevations of windows and doors.
Okay.
In terms of their height. It just appears on the, I assume that's the south side that we're looking at now.
Yeah.
That those windows up there are pretty small. And it seemed like they could be more compatible with windows on the lower level, and maybe some detail in the gable ends. I didn't get a chance to see this in person, so I don't know if there's if they're siding all the way up into the gable or if there's a different treatment in the gables, but we'd want to see the details of trim and corner boards and how that roof is supported, and all that would take, you know, much more detailed architectural drawings.
Does that make sense to you, Mr. Axmeyer? What's being suggested?
Yes. Well, I intended to have more formal presentation later.
Right, when you apply. But,
I just wanted to get a pre-app consensus or a feeling of from the Historic Commission.
Sure. So,
if you want to know why there's a little notch in the corner on the first floor.
Okay.
That's to accommodate this tree and rock that are there.
Oh.
As well as the tenant's water hose area. Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, right there. That's where there's a large rock and a tree.
Okay.
And the gardener's headquarters, you might say, in that space. So I notched it for that.
So it'd be nice to see a site plan that shows that more clearly with dimensions and size of tree and rocks and that sort of
thing.
Yeah,
I wasn't sure whether to put those in because then it becomes more of a rendering. And this is absolute, the building itself.
Well, I was curious. You have quite a large setback from the property line or the sidewalk. Most of the other buildings on A Street are zero setback off the property line. I'm just wondering, when you build that addition, what will your setback from the sidewalk or the property line be?
Phase three will go right up to the sidewalk.
Okay, so you're going to come all the way up. And that makes sense to me because all of the other buildings on the street are zero setback.
How far away is the existing building now?
It's about 50 feet.
And so you're adding about, 15 feet or something?
The addition is 12 feet.
Okay.
But it only approaches 6 feet closer to the sidewalk.
Okay. So then the third phase would include another 30, 40 feet more?
Yes.
45 feet?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that whole elevation that we're looking on the south would go away?
Yes.
The third phase?
Yes.
So I think it might be important to show on your site plan what your third phase would be too.
Well, I thought that those would be available to you since those were turned in.
Oh.
Not in our packet.
Yeah, so the materials presented are what was submitted for the pre-application. Information that was previously in the department's hands from past planning applications wouldn't be included unless you submit it. I can show for the body here, if you give me a moment, a site plan of the property, an aerial photo of the existing property, which may help illuminate some of the questions that are brought up. So here's the existing building. I hope you can see that.
Yeah.
The addition that's proposed is coming 12 feet forward here, which still leaves quite a bit of front yard area. And I think Mr. Hoxmeyer is indicating that would be phase three of the development to develop in that area?
Yes.
Okay. How much of that area would be developed in phase three?
Right up to the sidewalk, I believe.
Yes.
The full width of the
corner would still remain a cafe.
Okay. So the ridge roof line on the left where the phase two addition would project out to the street. Okay. That's where your phase three would be. Okay. I get it.
that seems to be in line with what's happening on that side of A Street.
Right. So are there, other than an interest in seeing more detail once the application is submitted, are there any concerns that you see about this proposal?
No.
It sounds like people... Piper, were you there? I don't know who was saying something, but...
So I'll just chime in again after seeing that front elevation from the street. I think it would be nice to see what the existing elevation looks like without any addition.
Well, and I also I'm sorry.
I just did notice that that's the elevated deck and the little canopy over it is quite nice looking. And
it is.
I'm wondering if that wouldn't be extended when the addition is extended.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not sure if he's asking me to what he's asking me.
Are you? I think it was a comment. You want to rephrase what you just said, Dale?
Yeah, I just think that the tree is covering the lower level, so I'm not sure what's going on there. But the upper level with the awning deck and pair of doors and windows has much more.
A character
than what's proposed.
Yes, small windows. I agree.
Yeah, and if you were to view it more obliquely, you would see that there are currently two pergolas in front of the building.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's right.
Yes.
And the significance of that is?
Well, just that those, I don't know if the pergola, I don't know whether, it seems like one of the pergolas would be eliminated.
Oh, they would all remain.
Oh, they would all remain.
Because the addition's going just on the left side where the awning second story is.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So it'd be nice to see those existing elevations and then how it changes.
So it sounds to me like there's no big problem that people find this a worthy proposal. You just, at the point of application, we will have more detail.
Yes.
Is there any other question you might have for us? Before we move on?
No.
Okay. Well, this was your first Zoom conference. You did pretty darn well. I don't like getting used to it. But thank you so much for your presentation. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see you.
For taking the time.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much for waiting so patiently. Okay, I think we're ready to move on to the next bit of business, which is the awards that we are going to make in May, on May 17. And Brandon and Regan, I think, have developed a way for us to move efficiently through selecting those.
Yeah, I'm opening up a PowerPoint right now, which thank you all for the photos that you provided. I was able to create a slideshow of those. And let me see if I can open that up without. So let me open it up as a PDF. I can't do it as a PowerPoint. Does it takes over my Zoom hosting?
Oh, does it?
But I did save it as both in order to have that option.
Great.
So can you all see the presentation now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so the way that I have structured this, and granted you guys can do so any way you would like, but I tried to couple the candidates into the groups that were identified on the list. The first group is the mixed use commercial. And if you entertain it, I'll just go through those that were listed. And then the final slide of the mixed use commercial shows all four so that you can make a determination if you feel any should receive an award, and if so, which ones.
Sounds good. And
I'll click through them rather quickly, and we can go back to any that you feel that you'd like to. But the first is the new buildings on Lithia Way. This on 762 A Street was a commercial addition. The white area that you see here on the side and the back, including some living space as well. This was a conversion of the first floor of a single family residential unit and the detached cottages into a hotel motel. So it does fall into the commercial category at 549 East Main. And lastly, an interior and exterior modifications to what was Sesame and is now Scout, a restaurant at 21 Winburn Way. So that is the four candidates that we had listed for commercials and mixed use. And I'll turn it over to you to make any recommendations, and then we can go on to the residential awards.
I would make a recommendation that we approve, nominate 185 to 199 Lithia Way.
I agree.
As an outstanding infill. The rest of them do not compare.
Yeah. And it's the biggest structure, so that's pretty impressive too. But it, okay. So do we have to make a motion, or can we just
I think unless there's an objection to that,
yeah, let's just
go ahead and accept that.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, then the other aspect of it, my understanding, and you guys would all know better than I, is that once a selection is made, then one of the historic commissioners volunteers to write up a blurb about it for the
award
itself. So now would probably be a good time to
volunteer
or self-assign such a duty.
Okay. Anybody? Well, I don't know if I'd be so good at the commercial buildings, but to describe them. Anybody want to volunteer for that?
I could do that one. Piper, were you chiming in?
Piper has signed off at this point because the meeting has gone past her daughter's bedtime. And she,
yes.
So
we should all be so lucky, huh? So anyway, that would be good.
Well, let's see how many we have. We'll remember which one. Sure. And we'll come back.
Yeah.
And then moving on to single family residential. Again, I'll click through these rather quickly. We have 114 Granite Street, which you're all familiar with. 126 Fork Street, which you may not be as familiar with because it's not visible from any public right of way. You have to go up a flag lot to get to it. And this was listed as an addition because there was an addition to the building. The existing building on the right was demolished and replaced with a building that's similar at 882 B Street. And many of you that have visited this, there's also an addition at the back, I think at 163 8th Street that is.
But separate. The historic building never should have been.
Oh, is that right?
Absolutely.
No,
that was,
no way.
That was terrible.
Yeah, can't do that one.
And the new one is not as compatible either.
So okay, that's for another day, but that's
With that, moving on to 254 North Laurel Street, which was a new building. I think you see it here with some landscaping work still to be done in the front, but the building is completed.
Is that on the street facing?
It's on the alley. It was hard to find. Uh-huh. And the detail in it isn't that tremendous.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
House with a lot of dirt in front.
And this is, back from the street on 878 Siskiyou Boulevard. There's a small residential unit across from the high school on Siskiyou Boulevard. And then this was built as a unit that's twice the size of that small unit. So it is a single family residential, and it made the small unit an accessory residential unit by building the big unit in the back.
Terrible.
And that is the five single-family residential units within the historic district that are available for your consideration, if any.
Well, if we would do the Granite Street one, I would be happy to meet with the owners and write that one up.
Can we look at that one? I think that's the only one that might qualify.
Yeah. Do you think it's worth an award?
So, you know, this has a long history of 10 years of talking to a lot of architects and designers, including myself. You know, they obviously don't have a very compatible front door. They saved the redwoods.
That's why I took such a big picture, Dale, of the front door, because it's totally out of sync.
It's quite an improvement from what they originally had, which was a big south-facing wall. And Peter Sipes, I think, helped her out and did a fine job. I don't know, Brandon, do you know if that cottage was ever moved down there?
It was.
Yeah, so the cottage is now in place and is currently being renovated.
It's almost finished.
Did they leave it at single story or did they?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they proposed to do two story, which would.
No, they've done a really nice job on that. That would definitely be an award.
Yeah, I think the cottage should be an award.
Yeah.
And not the building?
Not the 114?
Well, I don't think the cottage is done. It would have to be next year.
Yeah.
So do you think what makes, is this one of those categories that there's nothing that we would consider worthy?
Well, I mean, it's got a lot of, you know, kind of classic historic detail.
I think it does look
better. I'm okay with it.
I think the door is weird. What about doing?
I mean, the door is totally incompatible with historic.
It really is.
I'm wondering if we just want to wait till next year and give it to the cottage.
Give it to the cottage. Good point, Dale.
I would go for that.
Okay. And then at one, at West Fork is, you know, a nice, modern, good-looking building, but not compatible in any way.
How did it get past the Historic Commission? I wanted to know, but that's okay.
Because it's down the driveway, probably.
Okay. So then we move on to, so there's nothing in single-family residence. That's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So accessory residential units should also be relatively straightforward, as I believe this is the only project, yes, that...
So this is the one that the elevations that I took. And if you can't zoom in on these, could you?
This way.
Oh, yeah.
So if you zoom to the right one, right building.
Oh, yes.
The right picture, I mean. Brandon, it's really nice having your technology.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
So that's the original.
I don't play the technology. I'm just using it. So.
Yeah, but. We can't use it, so that's great.
So that's the north facade of this house, and you can see the original window in the window trim, which was quite elaborate, and then they just threw in vinyl windows everywhere else and put flat trim all the way around and hardy plank. So that's the addition on the back. That's the original. So, you know, they look totally different and kind of incompatible. So they had an opportunity to match the siding, and they didn't. And then if you look at the other photo, that whole addition, I mean, the deck addition, that's the second story of the addition. Those windows were more in the 50-60 style, but were probably put in somewhere then. But then again, they had an opportunity to, you know, bring out the trim, and I just feel like they kind of simplified too much, and it's not a great example. The trim corners aren't the same size, and
so we can move on from those two. Is that the only? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So then we move on to multifamily residential. The first one listed here at 270 Laurel Street. It was a pre-existing. I tried to capture a photo of it, which you'll remember, and I couldn't find a good photo of the eagle made out of shingles on the street-facing wall. But that's something that most of us that drove down that road a lot, I remember. So the applicant, you know, essentially gutted the building and rebuilt the interior. And this elevation or rendering shows the work that was done on the building or proposed on the building. And then on the left, you can see the outcome of that effort.
And then additionally, I took this photo on the left-hand side as a parking area. It's all gated, kind of a gated private parking area. And the cars have canopies with solar on the top of them. So it's a nice little kind of private development, but you know, I don't see any historic compatibility on the facade that faces the street. You know, they're just kind of hardy shingles and aluminum windows and basic trim. The house, you know, was probably, I mean, the building was probably built in the 60s and it kind of just looks kind of that way still.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the decks and stuff, I think they did a nice job and they certainly improved the property dramatically, but I don't think there's anything.
But it's not
award winning. Yeah.
I agree. So we can move on again.
So this is another pre-existing building, which is listed in our building permit software as a an additional unit. But essentially, this was a shop on the downstairs that was converted into a dwelling.
Right.
So what was a two-car garage and a shop is now a garage and a residential unit. So.
I think we gave them an award for the front house, maybe for the whole project years ago.
Yeah, it's Eric Larson.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, there wasn't really any changes that you would have noticed from the outside of the building as part of this development.
Right.
Other than the garage doors.
Yeah.
And that was the two. So here we are back at a limited selection for you to choose from.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, I think that they did get an award. We could check that, but again, this one isn't visible from the street, and the front one is kind of the award-winning one. They're both very cute, I think, but I'm not sure we need to give them another award for just a conversion.
No.
I think the front unit was very nice done, and this not so much.
Yeah.
So now we move on to the one where there were a lot of applicants or candidates. So I'll go through them quickly. I think there's close to 10 or so. 73 Pine Street.
Okay, this is the one I took a photo of, and the front house is original with the skirting. And then they added the addition to the back and the garage, matching all the details of the original house.
Nice.
The original house has probably V-groove siding, but they matched the exposure with hardy plank. But all the windows, the trim, the detailing is all nicely historic. And it sets back subservient to the main house. And I think that's a goal. They also offset the addition.
Unfortunately, in this one, I could not find a plan or an image that showed the addition, which is to the back of the building.
Yeah, I there wasn't one that I could see. And I was wondering if they were talking, I think in my thing, it said it was a second story addition and there's those windows, the windows in the little clear story or the little poop out up there, you know, was open with no windows and it looked like they're remodeling. They redid the eaves and the roof, but they used compatible materials in the eaves, but I didn't see any additions.
Yeah, the permit said a rear addition.
Okay.
Again, I think we talked on this one a moment ago, 163 8th Street. It's the same one with the yellow house in front. The project's not completed because there is a garage and an open area that is still being constructed.
But that garage, once it's built, is going to be hideous.
Is it? Well, it's right in, it's kind of conspicuous.
So this one,
can we go back to that last one just for drill?
Yeah.
So that's the proposed roof they're putting on this thing, a shed roof?
On this building here, once it goes up, yeah.
Oh, it's
and again, it's open air on top of it and a carport on one side.
Why wouldn't it be a gable like everything else? Okay.
Okay.
I photographed this one and I probably wouldn't have selected the paint color they did, but they added to the back of it. This is original. They added to the back of it and basically built a new garage. They had the siding milled. The corbels are all great. I think this one deserves an award.
Okay.
It's a nice job.
So that's the back of the left picture is the original?
No.
Is that an addition?
Is the original house.
Okay.
And then they added probably 20 feet to create a first floor master. There isn't a second floor, a master suite, a patio, and then they did the garage. And look at how cute their dogs are.
Yeah, I was wondering.
So what you are seeing on the left, that is an addition that is extending the building's length 20 feet toward the rear.
I think they have the siding made and the corbels and everything. I think it deserves an award.
So, okay.
I agree.
I like to say that.
And I'll write that up.
What's that?
I'll do the write-up on this.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you.
And that is on Siskiyou Boulevard 542.
Yes, got it. Great.
This one at 324 Avery Street. Again, we don't have a photo of it. I apologize. But I think that, Keith, you took a look at this one initially.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's not worth considering.
Okay.
835-839 East Main. They did an addition to the right of the building that you can see here. I found a picture of a before the addition was added. Quite a bit of decking and staircase in the front between the face of the addition and the street. And
this actually is something I gave the owner a drawing for because their addition was so bad. And and what they didn't do is close that front deck and use the existing stairway. They pushed it out again. So that, to me, that door just is a little bit, they could have entered from the inside, but I think that they're probably looking ahead and probably trying to bootleg something up there. But
well, it's not very attractive.
It's much improved from what they have.
Is it?
Well, I think
it's not award-winning.
The downstairs of that was being used as a dance studio. And it's, again, the detailing's not great. It's not an award winner.
No, it doesn't look like it. Oh, and this is very bad pictures on my part because it was landlocked. I couldn't get a perspective on the. So the left picture is the front, very modest size. And then the top right picture is what is, I think, part of the original house. And then the bump out there that I show in the bottom right seems to be the addition. Uh-huh. So I think from a lay person's perspective, I don't know if the French doors were there before, but there it provides continuity. And it's not atrocious. Well, I think some of these others weren't very.
So, on the lower right-hand picture where the tree is?
Yeah, that's.
Is that a driveway? Is that their driveway?
Yes, so their driveway goes back that way.
And right. Is that the addition? Is that part of the addition then?
That is the addition, I believe.
Okay, well, so they match the pitches and it looks like the siding.
That's what I thought. I thought it, considering, I mean, it. I don't know, the windows even look fairly compatible. And so I thought it was attractive.
Well, it does look like on the addition to the back, there's a slider and narrow the sliders. So, I mean, in that sense, the windows, or no, it's a casement.
The casement.
It's a casement window. Maybe that's for fire egress, possibly.
Yeah. Well.
Well, they took they added small panes and they have that in the front elevation. Yeah. Again, those were probably 50 additions or something.
Yeah, because that looks like one of those aluminum, you know, steel windows from the.
You're talking about the front of the house?
Yeah, the front of the house with the.
Yeah, that one looks right. It doesn't.
Yeah, it's a corner unit. You can see through it. So they've got like another window around the corner.
Yeah, I think they're probably still wood, but that's probably where they picked up the small pane window idea.
You can see the hinges on that window.
Yeah.
That's what I wondered about, is the front didn't look like they kept the originals. So I don't know. I'm sorry that I couldn't get a good vantage point, but it was landlocked.
Yeah.
So do you want to, I think, I don't know that it's that impressive.
I mean, it's okay, but it's award-winning, I don't think.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think so either. Oh, another problem with location for me to take pictures. So this is B Street. The white fence is facing B Street. And again, there were properties right next to both. It was right next to both the sides of the property. So I took, so the addition, I think this is right, don't you, Brandon? Must be the one on the left that's a second story added. And so you did a better job of getting that second story. I took a picture across from the corner lot of the second story, walked behind where there is also a separate single family residence, although it looks to me like it's two
people. The garages.
Yeah, the garages, but they have two entrances because they have two numbers. Even though this is one property, 843B, there's an 841 or something over there. So I don't know if that's technically a rental house. I don't know.
Yeah, it would be two units on one property.
Is that what it is?
So it seems to me that the addition to the left, so does the street, is the fence is on the street, the picket fence?
Yes, that's along the sidewalk facing B Street.
So the house doesn't even face B Street?
It doesn't. It doesn't.
What's it face?
It faces the next door neighbor's yard.
Oh, really? So
yes.
The front porch doesn't face the street?
No. The address even was on the side wall there. It's definitely unusual. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think it's...
It seems like the addition is overpowering the original. So.
Yeah, I think we can move on.
Okay.
Again, another one in which an addition was not visible from the public street. So this is, Piper took a picture of their backyard, but I think the addition is to the right, which is bit of wood that you can see there behind the tree. But essentially, it's not visible from any vantage point.
Yeah, it's rejected. Yeah, it's just sad. And this one, I don't know where the addition is.
Yes, I brought up a site plan so that you could show where this addition is. It's on the rear of the building.
Oh, dear.
And I was going to try and take a picture of it this afternoon at lunch, but unfortunately, there was a car accident right there on the street. Geez.
It
blocked off the entire street. Saw a car flipped over, which was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Well, I tried to get... I rang, there's two different, I don't know, rental units or something, and nobody was home, so I didn't want to go through
these. Isn't it on the alley?
No, so this is a lot that goes all the way from Elida all the way to Morse. And so it has frontage on both sides. So again, from the backside on Morse, we probably could have gotten a view of the addition. That would have been the backside of the house that's shown on the left.
Oh, sorry.
The only criticism is that the pitches don't match, and I would always do that. But
I mean, I just don't think it's outstanding.
Let's
move on.
Let's move on.
Oh.
So 92 Dewey Street, which I don't know if Mr. Shostrom has to recuse himself. I think you've worked on this one from our past conversations.
Yeah, but it's a 14 by 20 ARU. Not an ARU, it's actually for their son. But...
Yeah, so it's considered an addition because it's essentially a detached bedroom.
There you go. So every detail matches what's on the house.
Yeah, I was able to talk to the owner, and I thought it was very attractive in the back. I mean, I like the door.
Maybe they could put that on the one on Granite.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, that would.
But I think that the isn't the main house. It is these same colors, right?
All the details match.
Yeah, of course. If you were involved, they would all be matched.
is this
even,
real?
Even the 10 by 12 storage shed that used to be in that location, which we rolled on pipes to a new slab on the opposite of the front door, matches.
Well, I think
is this award worthy?
Really? I've had plenty of awards, and it's fine.
I mean, it's nice, but come on, let's get some good stuff to talk
there
about.
There you go.
Okay.
So that concludes all the additions.
So if we just reiterate,
I think 73 Pine, 542 Siskiyou were both identified as compatible.
I could write up on the 73 Pine.
Were there others that?
I don't think there was any others.
Yeah, I don't recall. So.
Okay. No, I think it was just those two.
Well, we also have 175 Church, Brandon.
Yes.
For the individual.
We're going to Civic and individual now.
Okay.
So right. The Civic Award essentially is a project you're all familiar with.
Oh, yeah.
Marking Ashland Places. And I think Andy Stallman and Dale Shostrom have both worked above and beyond to make this a reality. We now have the medallions, and the sculpture was just recently put in place.
So I went by there today.
Oh, good.
Oh, was it in place?
It's in place. It's so. I think it's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, I think unless I heard it needed some electric run to
very
it.
Very nice.
But yeah.
And the medallions are amazing. They're just amazing. I would definitely support that award.
Because
I was part of that process. It was very painful. and I dropped out, and Dale and Andy. Well, and it represents a good, it's an example of two commissions working together, which doesn't always happen. So
it's true. I think they're both worth awarding.
Well, it's one award, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the entire project is, my understanding is the Marking Ashland Places project, and I'm sure those of you on the commission that were here when it was initiated know better than I. But the intention was to look at multiple historic districts, and in each district have an identification of key properties with the medallions and a connecting sculpture that in that district. So this is the first of that.
Right, that's correct. And so actually, I could write something about this just because I was a part of the process for a little while and could work with, you know, get it right, because I could talk to Dale or Andy. But could someone else do that 73 Pine Street then?
I can do that one since I took the picture. I'm a little familiar with it.
But oh, yeah, that's a good idea. So I'll work on the Civic.
And before I go on to the individual, I just want to give a shout out to this guy in the hard hat here, Aaron Anderson in our department, who has quite a bit of work on making this a reality as well.
Oh, but is that right?
Staff person. He's not listed. So.
Oh.
So individual award candidate. This was a nomination that we received relating to 175 Church Street. So it's not a modification to the building in any way, but for those of you that saw the award nomination, I didn't include all the pictures of the interior of what was a quote unquote collector's home. And so these Julie Davis and her daughter and other family members worked to restore the house to its prior glory.
I live around the corner, and they were there working all the time. I think it's great to give them an award.
I'd be happy to interview them.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right. Well, thank you guys for making
it. Thank you for making it so easy to go
through. Did we get everybody assigned to a project then?
No. Well, Dale, I have you assigned to two.
Oh.
So I have you at 73 Pine and the 185 Lithia Way project. Do you want me to put Piper on one of those?
That sounds good.
Okay, which one do you want me to put Piper on?
Piper could do the commercial building downtown.
Okay.
Yeah, that was very smooth operating for making the decisions. Thank you. And so now it's your time to talk about the wildfire.
And I do not have a presentation for the wildfire mitigation construction standards. I just wanted to let this commission be aware of that. I know that those of you in the building industries are familiar with the code change. The state allowed communities to implement wildfire standards. And as Ashland in its entirety is in a wildfire hazard zone, the city of Ashland adopted these wildfire mitigation construction standards that are outlined in the packet materials before you. Some of them relate to work that this commission does in terms of compatible materials. Yeah, namely, there are, under the new standards, some requirements for, you know, wrapping eaves, for having ignition resistant materials, which in some cases preclude the use of wood siding unless it has a backing behind it that is sheetrock to create a fire barrier. And as such, points people to use ignition resistant materials instead. But there is quite a bit in terms of decks and other standards that relate to the size of timber that need be used. But I wanted you to have a copy of that to read at your leisure. And if there's questions of it from this commission, I could be sure to request the building official answer those questions for you. Right. So that was it.
Well, right. I think, I guess my question would be, since we do look at materials, is the staff going to screen out those applications that don't meet these specifications?
The building department will at the point of building permitting.
Oh.
So the building department, their plan reviewers look to make sure that it complies with all building code. And this is part of the building code. So sometimes you'll see applications at the planning application stage. And I just wanted you to be aware that there may be material choices that are dictated by fire resistance.
Right. Would that be represented in the documents that we would see that they've been?
Well, ideally, an applicant would be presenting what could be built under the building code.
But certainly the prohibition of wood siding and things
like that. Yeah, and again, I don't want to frame it as a prohibition of wood siding.
Oh, probably not.
Wood siding can be done. There just has to be a sheetrock gypsum layer behind it or something that
I see
assists in stopping fire from going from the outside to the inside or slows it.
Well, you all hung in there. I think the last meeting was like 3.5 hours, and I thought we'd do a little better, but you all hung in there. Thank you very much.
And are we any closer to meeting live and maybe restoring the review board?
Yes, that's a good point, because I asked Brandon the same thing.
Yeah, my understanding is we are closer. The city council is going to have its first live meeting in April. And so my expectation is that the city manager will be removing the declaration of emergency that has required Zoom meetings, and we'll be able to begin live meetings again, likely in May. But we haven't had that directive yet from the city manager's office, but I do think it's coming shortly.
Yeah.
And just as a point of interest, I, in the last 3 weeks ago, had a COVID outbreak on a job of mine where everyone was vaccinated and had a booster.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Was not good.
I mean, everybody came out okay, but it was a scary moment there.
Yeah. Well, you've already had enough scary moments.
Yeah. Well, it's just that it's not gone yet. I mean, that's challenging is that, we are letting down our guard, but there are still people getting sick. And though it isn't as bad as it has been, and the hospitals and doctors are more capable of dealing with it, people are still dying.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm canceling my trip to New York for the fifth time.
Oh, dear.
In May.
Oh, dear.
We're getting our second boosters this weekend.
Oh, are you? That's what we should be doing.
So well, I have one quick question for Regan. Would you like that statement I made as a motion?
Yes, please.
That would be great.
I'll send it to you. Very much appreciate it.
That's very helpful. And I want to thank Brandon for choreographing this amazing in and out of all these people. But especially I find it very useful to have the presentation of the images on screen. And so I was talking to Brandon about if we get to the point we go back to a in-person meeting, it's really helpful to all be looking at the same image at the same time.
Yeah, and I do think that's one great aspect of Zoom meetings is that allows applicants to share their screen or me to share my screen. And
it's really
in person. PowerPoints get a little more difficult than swapping out thumb drives and that kind
of thing. Yeah, it is. But I appreciate all the work to get that done. And not to mention you've worked all day already. So thank you, everybody. Do we have to formally have a motion to adjourn?
Can I just say something really quick?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I will get you guys all the information for the winners and their contact information and anything else that's to do with the awards. And then just make note that the awards are Tuesday, May 17th at 12:30
at Pioneer Hall.
Pioneer Hall. And I'm going to try and, if the weather's nice, we're going to try and do it outside on the patio.
Oh, great.
Not inside. So,
and you sent us a flyer. Is there anything? I only saw the photo and one kind of page of information. Was that right?
That's it. Yeah. And then we're going to do the, we're just keeping it kind of small this year and doing the cemetery self-guided tours again on the 18th.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you for all your work on that as well. Thank you. So did you say I should have a motion to adjourn?
From the former chair, I would say all you have to do is say, I'm done.
I'm done. Yes. Well, thank you for hanging in there.
Have a good night.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.